It said October 5th through November. But it doesn't say Richmond. I thought it says for the seat. I thought you received that was the season.
No, no, that's the registration and has the website to go online and register.
Nice. Nice. Okay, I will do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
2 minutes.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is if we don't have one.
Not if you need to protect the woman.
Who else was coming?
It's Don.
Don, Janice.
Janice is it?
Janice is it?
Who's on the microphone? Why do you think I'm leaving?
I didn't think you were here.
Why?
But maybe lost interest. No, for some reason, Stella told me who wasn't going to be here. For some reason, I thought she sent you.
Oh, yeah, no.
But it's Joanna, Jim. It's the J's. Joanna, Jim, and Janice.
Oh, and Sean. So we're waiting for Donna. No, I...
And Donna's in town. She's been with an email, right?
No.
But we didn't call, but we figured Donna, I figured Donna for sure was going to be here. So we just called you two.
Here she comes. Nope.
No.
Ah, Sandy, we thought you were someone else. I'm like, here she comes.
I'm sorry.
So she was sitting with Donna.
Well, to the members of the community and television and present in the audience, we are one person shy of a quorum at the moment. It is 5:30, and so when we get our fifth person, we will begin our meeting. Thank you.
Step on them and break them rather than turn them into Walgreens right there. So
Good evening. The Tuesday, November 1st, 2011 meeting of the Carson City Parks and Recreation Commission is now called to order. Do we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Lasko.
Present.
Vice Chairperson Walt.
Here.
Commissioner Adams.
Here.
Commissioner Broad. Commissioner Curtis.
Here.
Commissioner Lehman. Commissioner Smilinski. Commissioner Westergaard.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson. A quorum is present.
Thank you. Are there any citizen comments that precede our beginning with the agenda? Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much. We move to item number one, action on approval of minutes. And do we have an action?
I move to approve Parks and Rec Commission meeting minutes of October 4th, 2011.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Meeting minutes are approved. Item number two, modifications to the agenda. Are there any modifications today? I'll read the notice. Agenda management notice. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Note, items scheduled at a specific time cannot be heard earlier than the scheduled time per open meeting law requirements. We move to item number three, staff updates, discussion only, no deliberation. Item A, update regarding the activities and programs by the Clear Creek Bowman at the John D. Winters Centennial Park Archery Range. Scott Fehrenbrook and Mr. Jim Davis of the Clear Creek Bowman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. For the record, Scott Fehrenbrook, Director of Operations. To my left is Jim Davis, a board member for the Clear Creek Bowman, representing the Clear Creek Bowman tonight. Just to give you a little background on our relationship with Clear Creek Bowman, they are a nonprofit organization promoting archery sports in Carson City. They utilize the John D. Winter Centennial Archery Range, which is just east of the East Golf Course at Eagle Valley Golf Course. We have a use agreement in force between the city and the Clear Creek Bowman, which outlines our partnership. We own the property, the facility, and all the structures that are on the property, and they operate and maintain the facility for their club's use. The public and non-members can use the range if they have the proper liability insurance, and they have to have proof of that liability insurance on their person when they use the range. If you're a club member, you automatically get the liability insurance. And the reason I mention that is we do get a lot of phone calls from people saying, you know, how come the club just gets to use the range? Well, the general public can use the range, but they have to have their own liability insurance. Several years ago, we had a good friend of mine, a good friend of Jim's, a good friend of the Bowman by the Tom Brooks, who passed away. And Tom was an avid outdoorsman, and a bunch of Tom's friends got together after his passing and set up what is called the Tom Brooks Foundation. And Vern and CK will be talking a little bit more about Tom Brooks when you hear about the fishing derby update, the kids fishing derby at Bailey Pond. You know, they used some of the money from the Tom Brooks Foundation for that particular event. The Tom Brooks Foundation also donated up to at least $3,000 in the last 2 years to promote archery sports for youth at the Centennial Archery Range. And so we've participated in that, and Joel Dunn's program, the Kickback Camp, they took kids out there. Other kids went out there to use the range, and that money was spent for that purpose. And also the club members for the Clear Creek Bowman were instructors out there. They volunteered their time to instruct the kids. So they've done a lot of good things out there. They've held a lot of tournaments. They've held a lot of different events. Plus, they've given back to the community as far as youth programs go. And with their efforts and with the efforts and funding from the Tom Brooks Foundation, they've done a lot of good things. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Jim Davis, and he can tell you a little bit more about their activities and programs out there at the Centennial Archery Range.
Well, in addition to our normal club shoots and 3D shoots, the main thing that we have through the Tom Brooks Memorial Foundation is a youth program, and we teamed up with the Latchkey program that the city has, and they schedule shoots. And the first year we had about 200 youth come through the range that summer. This summer we've had 350 youth come through, all volunteer and at no charge to them because of the donations from the Tom Brooks Memorial. We've purchased bows and arrows, arm guards, finger tabs, quivers, and when the kids come out, we give them about 15 minutes on safety and another 5 or 10 minutes on shooting a bow, and then with the help of club members and the Latchkey counselors, we break them up into groups and get them shooting. And so this year, 350 went through the program during the summer. Plus, in addition to that, some of the kids have told their parents, we have a Tuesday night shoot and a Wednesday night work party, and they're still interested. They come out on Tuesday nights, bring their parents. We set their parents up with a bow and arrows and get them shooting with their kids. And Wednesdays, while we're working, the kids also do the same thing. They bring their parents out. We'll get them shooting in an area that we're not working. And we've had people coming down from Tahoe. We've had, you know, people coming from Reno. The kids bring in their parents, and they've just kind of heard about it through word of mouth. So then we've had a couple of the kids that wanted to have their birthday parties out there, so we set up a deal where they could bring their cake and no ice cream. There's no electricity out there, but they bring their cake, and then we set them up shooting, and so that was an additional probably 50 kids there coming out on Tuesday nights, the birthday parties. So probably as many as 400 kids went through the program, and some of them brought their parents at no charge. And the Latchkey people specifically told me that they really like it because all the kids get to go. There's no extra charge for anything. And one of the other things that we get is the compliment of how clean the range is. But after every shoot, we pick up the trash. We call Scott. He has the city trash truck go through there, and so we can keep it real clean that way. So any savings we get, or the money we've got from the Tom Brooks Fishing Derby, has been specifically used for kids' equipment. Now, this year we hand them a bow, and then they go get arrows. And next year we hope to have enough equipment where we hand them a bow, a quiver full of arrows, a finger tab and an arm guard, and then, you know, cut down on the time we have setting the equipment out and give them a little more shooting time. Anyway, that's pretty much it, but it's kind of amazing. It caught on. I go into the store, and these kids come up to me, "Yeah, I know you. You're the guy who gives the archery thing." And I go, "Yeah. Are you an archer?" And they're going, "Oh, yeah, we love it," you know, and they're really having a good time out there. And I'd like to once again thank the city and the Parks Department for everything they do. And we just had our turkey shoot. We had 60 shooters at our turkey shoot, and we have another 4 shoots a year, 4 of the 3D shoots. So it's and then every Tuesday and Wednesday we're out there either working or shooting. So getting a lot of use out of the thing and out of the range, and a lot of kids are getting a chance to use it at no cost. So they can see what kind of equipment they want, and a lot of them talk their moms and dads into buying them a bow, and but they have a good idea of what they want when they come in. So getting a lot of use out of it at no charge to the public.
Great, thank you.
That's
acquainting young people with a traditional Western activity, and at no cost to them, no cost to the city. That's awesome. We thank you, and we thank staff for working with you. Commissioner Curtis had a comment.
Yes, I just wanted to thank you, too, and I really appreciate your bringing this to us, because I had no idea, especially about the kids, that you were doing that. One of the programs that we're trying to get started now is called Let's Move Carson City, and the idea is to get families outside, outdoors, doing things, and this is just another one that can be added to the list. And, you know, I'm sure the more people are aware of it, the more you'll have. But a question I have is, how young can the kids be to do this?
We have kids as young as 5 years old.
And, you know, kids up to 18 years old. And if we get things going with the county, if we get the kids organized and everything's going good, we get the counselors to shooting also. In fact, a couple of the counselors brought their parents out and shot on Tuesday nights. And again, we have the equipment. We have the building out there that we store our equipment in. We store our 3D animals, all our targets. And so when they come out, we have everything right there, everything that they need. And on the birthday parties, you can't get them to come in and eat cake. We want to shoot, you know. So with the little ones, we'll set balloons out. The older kids will set 3D targets, and kids that are, a lot of them just want to shoot the regular target faces, and so we have a different things for the different ages, and it's really gone over well, and all volunteer time. So.
And if any of the commissioners or their families want to come out and try it, you'll take it.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. It's sounds like something I can work towards as I rehab my arm usage. Supervisor Walt had a comment.
Do you work at all with the 4-H?
The 4-H comes out and uses the range, but they have their own instructors. And, you know, we've offered to help them out. But now, and I don't know if it's the Carson 4-H or there's a 4-H club and a Boy Scout group that comes out, and they have their own equipment and their own instructors. And
any other commissioner comments on this topic? Any citizen comments? All right, we conclude item 4A. Thank you very much. Again, we appreciate your efforts and your interest. 3A, sorry.
We've got from the Tom Brooks Fishing Derby has been specifically used for kids' equipment. Now, this year we hand them a bow and then they go get arrows, and next year we hope to have enough equipment where we hand them a bow, a quiver full of arrows, and a finger tab and an arm guard, and then, you know, cut down on the time we have setting the equipment out and give them a little more shooting time. Anyway, that's pretty much it, but it's kind of amazing. It caught on. I go into the store and these kids come up to me. Yeah, I know you. You're the guy who gives the archery thing. And I go, yeah. Are you an archer? And they're going, oh, yeah, we love it, you know. And they're really having a good time out there. And I'd like to once again thank the city and the Parks Department for everything they do. And we just had our turkey shoot. We had 60 shooters at our turkey shoot, and we have another four shoots a year, four of the 3D shoots. So it's and then every every Tuesday and Wednesday we're out there either working or shooting. So getting a lot of use out of the thing and out of the range, and a lot of kids are getting a chance to use it at no cost. So they can see what kind of equipment they want, and a lot of them talk their moms and dads into buying them a bow, and but they have a good idea of what they want when they come in. So getting a lot of use out of it at no charge to the public.
Great, thank you.
That's acquainting young people with a traditional Western activity, and at no cost to them, no cost to the city. That's awesome. We thank you, and we thank staff for working with you. Commissioner Curtis had a comment.
Yes, I just wanted to thank you, too, and I really appreciate your bringing this to us, because I had no idea, especially about the kids, that you were doing that. One of the programs that we're trying to get started now is called Let's Move Carson City, and the idea is to get families outside, outdoors, doing things, and this is just another one that can be added to the list. And, you know, I'm sure the more people are aware of it, the more you'll have. But a question I have is, how young can the kids be to do this?
We have kids as young as 5 years old.
And, you know, kids up to 18 years old. And if we get things going with the county, if we get the kids organized and everything's going good, we get the counselors to shooting also. In fact, a couple of the counselors brought their parents out and shot on Tuesday nights. And again, we have the equipment. We have the building out there that we store our equipment in. We store our 3D animals, all our targets. And so when they come out, we have everything right there, that everything that they need. And on the birthday parties, you can't get them to come in and eat cake. We want to shoot, you know. So with the little ones, we'll set balloons out. The older kids will set 3D targets, and kids that are, a lot of them just want to shoot the regular target faces, and so we have a different things for the different ages, and it's really gone over well, and all volunteer time, so.
And if any of the commissioners or their families want to come out and try it, you'll take it?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. It's sounds like something I can work towards as I rehab my arm usage. Supervisor Walt had a comment.
Do you work at all with the 4-H?
The 4-H comes out and uses the range, but they have their own instructors. And, you know, we've offered to help them out. But now, and I don't know if it's the Carson 4-H or the there's a 4-H club and a Boy Scout group that comes out, and they have their own equipment and their own instructors. And
any other commissioner comments on this topic? Any citizen comments? All right, we conclude item 4A. Thank you very much. Again, we appreciate your efforts and your interest. 3A, sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item, item 3B, update on the Tom Brooks Memorial Kids Fishing Event. Mr. Crime.
Yes,
and
if
Mr.
I may.
Mr. Bailey.
And Mr. Bailey's going to join me here.
Great.
He keeps coming.
I'm here, man.
I would also, just as a quick diversion, I'd like to also thank Jim Davis. I was one of those parents that my kids found out about this, and they hauled me out there. And it was fun. And we had a couple, two, three evenings over the summer. Last summer and this summer, that was really enjoyable. So we thank Jim and what they do out there as well. So it's great family entertainment and fun. But what my real purpose here in front of the mic tonight is to talk to you and share with you regarding the successful Kids Fishing Day, the Tom Brooks Memorial Kids Fishing Day that happened down at the Urban Fishing Pond. What I've included in your packet is the article that Sandy Hoover. Sandy Hoover has been a big follower of this pond since we started raising money, as well as all the fine articles we get from Sandy. She's in the audience, just so everybody knows, but it's nice to have her here this evening, and she does do, she has always done and has been a big supporter of this pond, and it's been great to have her and those articles out there ahead of these events. But on Saturday, October 15th, a stalwart bunch of folks from the Lions Club and the Nevada Department of Wildlife and the Carson City Parks and Recreation Department showed up there before sunrise and got things going, and I believe it was a very successful day. The Lions Host Lions Club of Carson City spearheaded this effort, and the gentleman who spearheaded that spearheading effort is C.K. Bailey, and he's to my left. And so, anyway, wanted to give the opportunity. We did put in your packet also some pictures that the Nevada Appeal put in, as well as a thank you note from C.K., and then some pictures that we took at the event itself, and those are in your packets. But I thought hearing it from CK might be better than hearing it from me. You hear from me all the time, so I thought maybe CK would add a little light levity here.
I doubt that, Vern. You're top dog in this. Kevin CK Bailey, Carson City, for the record. I joined up with the Carson City Host Lions because basically anybody that embraces this fishing pond, I embrace. And they decided that they wanted to go forth and put together a kids' fishing day, not a fishing derby. There's the only competition that the participants had were between them and the fish. Completely family-oriented event, and like Jim Davis, I'll tell you, that's fantastic group of individuals that are bringing outdoor sports to our youth, giving them something to do, giving them something very positive to do. Gosh, where shall I start? Because this is going to be quick. We had somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 kids of all ages. It was a mosh pit. It was all happening at once. Everybody came in. Thanks to the engineers at Loomis & Associates with Vern Cron, who is spearheading a lot of this, and the whole management family, Roger, Scotty, everybody that had to do with this pond. There were rocks that were placed into little lagoons, little tiny environments within the pond. They're flat rocks so that kids could actually go from rock to rock, see the little creatures that are developing the food chain in the pond. And so if they ever got bored of fishing, they'd actually have just as much fun in these little lagoons. Not them in the water, them out of the water playing in the water. Does that make any sense? Anyway, there wasn't a rock that was empty. It was absolutely maxed out. I'm kind of frightened for next year. I really don't know what's going to happen. I think we're going to probably try to figure that out, maybe get, maybe even hand out tickets where, still free to the public, of course, and to the kids, but that they would come in maybe small sessions so that it wouldn't all just happen at once. And then for the entire 5 hours. There's going to be some improvement made. And did I say that we're going to be doing this next year? Okay. We're going to be doing this next year. It will be, maybe I shouldn't say when it's going to be. Should I?
No, I wouldn't go there.
Okay. Anyway, I have the date booked for next year. The Carson City Host Lions are extremely proud and extremely excited about this event.
Okay, thank you.
Next item, item 3B, update on the Tom Brooks Memorial Kids Fishing Event. Mr. Crime.
Yes,
and
if
Mr.
I may.
Mr. Bailey.
And Mr. Bailey's going to join me here.
Great.
He keeps coming.
I'm here, man.
I would also, just as a quick diversion, I'd like to also thank Jim Davis. I was one of those parents that my kids found out about this and they hauled me out there. And it was fun. And we had a couple, two, three evenings over the summer. Last summer and this summer, that were really enjoyable. So we thank Jim and what they do out there as well. So it's great family entertainment and fun. But what my real purpose here in front of the mic tonight is to talk to you and share with you regarding the successful Kids Fishing Day, the Tom Brooks Memorial Kids Fishing Day that happened down at the Urban Fishing Pond. What I've included in your packet is the article that Sandy Hoover has been a big follower of this pond since we started raising money, as well as all the fine articles we get from Sandy. She's in the audience, just so everybody knows, but it's nice to have her here this evening, and she has always been a big supporter of this pond, and it's been great to have her and those articles out there ahead of these events. But on Saturday, October 15th, a stalwart bunch of folks from the Lions Club and the Nevada Department of Wildlife and the Carson City Parks and Recreation Department showed up there before sunrise and got things going. And I believe it was a very successful day. The Lions Club, the Lions Host Lions Club of Carson City spearheaded this effort, and the gentleman who spearheaded that spearheading effort is C.K. Bailey, and he's to my left. And so, anyway, wanted to give the opportunity. We did put in your packet also some pictures that the Nevada Appeal put in, as well as a thank you note from C.K., and then some pictures that we took at the event itself, and those are in your packets. But I thought hearing it from CK might be better than hearing it from me. You hear from me all the time, so I thought maybe CK would add a little light levity here.
I doubt that, Vern. You're top dog in this. Kevin CK Bailey, Carson City, for the record. I joined up with the Carson City Host Lions because basically anybody that embraces this fishing pond, I embrace. And they decided that they wanted to go forth and put together a kids' fishing day, not a fishing derby. There's the only competition that the participants had were between them and the fish. Completely family-oriented event, and like Jim Davis, I'll tell you, that's a fantastic group of individuals that are bringing outdoor sports to our youth, giving them something to do, giving them something very positive to do. Gosh, where shall I start? Because this is going to be quick. We had somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 kids of all ages. It was a mosh pit. It was all happening at once. Everybody came in. Thanks to the engineers at Loomis & Associates with Vern Cron, who is spearheading a lot of this, and the whole management family, Roger, Scotty, everybody that had to do with this pond. There were rocks that were placed into little lagoons, little tiny environments within the pond. They're flat rocks so that kids could actually go from rock to rock, see the little creatures that are developing the food chain in the pond. And so if they ever got bored of fishing, they'd actually have just as much fun in these little lagoons. Not them in the water, them out of the water playing in the water. Does that make any sense? Anyway, there wasn't a rock that was empty. It was absolutely maxed out. I'm kind of frightened for next year. I really don't know what's going to happen. I think we're going to probably try to figure that out, maybe get, like, maybe even hand out tickets where, still free to the public, of course, and to the kids, but that they would come in maybe small sessions so that it wouldn't all just happen at once. And then for the entire 5 hours. There's going to be some improvement made. And did I say that we're going to be doing this next year? Okay. We're going to be doing this next year. It'll be, maybe I shouldn't say when it's going to be. Should I?
No, I wouldn't go there.
Okay. Yet. Anyway, I have the date booked for next year. The Carson City Host Lions are extremely proud and extremely excited about this event. Want to thank the Tom Brooks Memorial Foundation, who made a major contribution of $2,000 to this event that bought the larger fish. We have, about, I calculated this month, October, that the Nevada Department of Wildlife put in somewhere around 2,000 fish into that pond. You could walk literally across the backs of fish. And so that wasn't enough, so I went and bought $2,000 worth more. That wasn't 2,000 fish. These were large Mount Whitney strain rainbows from O'Banion Farms in Smith Valley. All permitted, everything with accordance with the city, Parks and Rec, and the Nevada Department of Wildlife. This whole thing went right with the book. We went just right down the chain. I've got permits on everything, including the health department. So the kids got to eat fish maybe later, but they got to eat pizza, and they got to eat ice cream, and they got to drink sports drinks. So they had all the real food groups involved in on that, and at least for a kid. And we look forward to next year's contribution by the Tom Brooks Memorial Foundation. I learned that Tom Brooks, who, in fact, I'm going to be getting more information on him because those that knew him were absolutely adored, and he was adored by and loved by his friends. And these whole things that went on, that go on with the Clear Creek Bowman, those contributions, those funding, wonderful items, the fish that we did for these kids, that's what they're really into, is giving to the kids. And that was what Tom Brooks was all about, educating kids about the outdoors and helping kids. Other than that, I'd take your questions. I think that pretty much said it. Is that it?
You did well.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Are there any commissioner questions?
How did we do that?
Well, you, as usual, you covered it from stem to stern.
I want you to know, I just want to thank this body for putting this pond in. This has been the biggest thing to hit this town in my 31 years of being here. This is really a serious venture, and it's a lovely thing for the men and women and kids of this community. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, and I agree, and I thank you, and obviously, the commission appreciates your comments. We are one of many players, along with staff in the city and Public Works and the engineers and the companies, including my employer, Loomis & Associates, who are involved. And I just personally want to say thank you for putting this on and bringing it home in a big way this year. I wasn't able to be involved, and you certainly handled it with top honors. So keep up the great work, and thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that, Chairman.
Any citizen comments regarding the Tom Brooks Memorial Kids Fishing Event? Hearing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
And we will move to item 3C, staff update regarding the Carson River Park Phase 2 construction project. Mr. Crown keeps his seat.
For the moment. Just wanted to quickly update the commission on that. The Board of Supervisors awarded the contract to Horizon Construction in October. The contractor has all of his bonds and insurance in place, and construction will start on this park project November 7th. We will speedily move along until the weather permits us no further work out there. Who knows when that will be, but the construction schedule will take us through the end of January if the weather remains workable within the next 2 to 3 months. So the other thing I wanted to let the commission know is that because of the construction activities down at the park will be closed during the construction periods. They will, for liability reasons and the contractor having the site open to construction trenching and other types of things down there. So for the next foreseeable future, the park will be closed during the construction activities. So wanted to share that with the commission. And other than that, we're looking forward to getting this project underway.
The Tom Brooks Memorial Foundation, who made a major contribution of $2,000 to this event, that bought the larger fish. We have, about, I calculated this month, October, that the Nevada Department of Wildlife put in somewhere around 2,000 fish into that pond. You could walk literally across the backs of fish. And so that wasn't enough, so I went and bought $2,000 worth more. That wasn't 2,000 fish. These were large Mount Whitney strain rainbows from O'Banion Farms in Smith Valley. All permitted, everything with accordance with the city, Parks and Rec, and the Nevada Department of Wildlife. This whole thing went right with the book. We went just right down the chain. I've got permits on everything, including the health department. So the kids got to eat fish maybe later, but they got to eat pizza, and they got to eat ice cream, and they got to drink sports drinks. So they had all the real food groups involved in on that, and at least for a kid. And we look forward to next year's contribution by the Tom Brooks Memorial Foundation. I learned that Tom Brooks, who, in fact, I'm going to be getting more information on him because those that knew him were absolutely adored, and he was adored by and loved by his friends. And these whole things that went on, that go on with the Clear Creek Bowman, those contributions, those funding, wonderful items, the fish that we did for these kids, that's what they're really into, is giving to the kids. And that was what Tom Brooks was all about, educating kids about the outdoors and helping kids. Other than that, I'd take your questions. I think that pretty much said it. Is that it?
You did well.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Are there any commissioner questions?
How did we do that?
Well, you, as usual, you covered it from stem to stern.
I want you to know, I just want to thank this body for putting this pond in. This has been the biggest thing to hit this town in my 31 years of being here. This is really a serious venture, and it's a lovely thing for the men and women and kids of this community. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, and I agree, and I thank you, and obviously, the commission appreciates your comments. We are one of many players, along with staff in the city and Public Works and the engineers and the companies, including my employer, Loomis & Associates, who are involved. And I just personally want to say thank you for putting this on and bringing it home in a big way this year. I wasn't able to be involved, and you certainly handled it with top honors. So keep up the great work, and thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that, Chairman.
Any citizen comments regarding the Tom Brooks Memorial Kids Fishing Event? Hearing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
And we will move to item 3C, staff update regarding the Carson River Park Phase 2 construction project. Mr. Crown keeps his seat.
For the moment. Just wanted to quickly update the commission on that. The Board of Supervisors awarded the contract to Horizon Construction in October. The contractor has all of his bonds and insurance in place, and construction will start on this park project November 7th. We will speedily move along until the weather permits us no further work out there. Who knows when that will be, but the construction schedule will take us through the end of January if the weather remains workable within the next 2 to 3 months. So the other thing I wanted to let the commission know is that because of the construction activities down at the park will be closed during the construction periods. They will, for liability reasons and the contractor having the site open to construction trenching and other types of things down there. So for the next foreseeable future, the park will be closed during the construction activities. So wanted to share that with the commission. And other than that, we're looking forward to getting this project underway. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer those at this time.
Thank you, Vern. Are there any commissioner comments on this item? Commissioner Westergaard.
Maybe it was already in the paper as far as the article on the approval, but is there a notice going to be made to the public that the park's going to be closed?
We'll be issuing a press release in the next day or so. And then we're also going to be, as a part of the project, there will be fencing, construction fencing going up down there, and there will be notices posted down there on the construction fencing letting the public know that that this is happening. It's one of those situations where we feel from a liability standpoint we need to do that, but there's also ways to, if they, you know, allow it, it is a busy park. It does get a lot of use. And so there is the opportunity still to go to Silver Saddle Ranch and still get plenty of opportunities to hike in that same area, Riverview Park, or, of course, they can use the Morgan Mill Road River Access area. So even though they may not be able to get to that particular parking spot, there are other opportunities along the river and, of course, Riverview Park. So opportunities, maybe it's a way to look at getting another opportunity to look at another one of our parks.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Any other comments? Any citizen comments on the Carson River Park Phase 2 construction project? Hearing seeing none, thank you. We move to item 3D, update regarding the multipurpose athletic center. Roger.
Well, I guess continuing this sequence of good news, at the same meeting that Vern was referring to where the Board of Supervisors approved the Carson River Park bid, they also approved three of the recommendations that this body, the Park and Recreation Commission, sent and forwarded on to the Board of Supervisors. Excuse me. That included approval of the contract with Valentine or Crane for the design of the multi-purpose athletic center. It also included approving using a facility use rental agreement instead of a joint use agreement with the Boys and Girls Club regarding their use of the facility. And they also approved, according to your recommendation, an amended option to purchase the property from the Boys and Girls Club. And so they approved all three of your recommendations. Staff is basically meeting with Brent Tippetts, who's the architect from Valentine or Crane, who's been working on this project for years. We'll be meeting with him again on Friday, kind of a kickoff project meeting, and we'll be going forward from that point forward. The schedule still hasn't been completely worked out, but we hope that we'll be going to bid on this project sometime March, maybe April. April might be more realistic, and award the contract in maybe late April or early May, and hopefully begin construction this spring or summer. And so anyhow, with the assistance of the Park and Recreation Commission, we've got a project and we're going forward. So congratulations to you folks.
Congratulations all around. That's great news to hear. Supervisor Wald.
Roger, I just wanted to thank you, staff, city staff as well, for doing this. This is your project.
Well, it's a community's project, so we're happy.
I couldn't agree more. It has been a long and ongoing process, and there has been many fits and starts. And it is personally very gratifying to hear that we will be moving forward. And I would like to thank all the people involved, all the groups involved, staff, all the commissioners present and past, the supervisors present and past, mayors present and past, and everybody else who has had anything to do with getting this thing going. And I certainly look forward to a groundbreaking celebration at some point in the future. So, again, thank everyone and congratulations all around. Any other commissioner comments? Any citizen comments regarding the multipurpose athletic center? Hearing none, we move to our agenda, item 4A. Discussion only regarding the award recipients from the Foundation for the Betterment of Carson City Parks and Recreation for 2011. Joe Salisbury and Roger Mullendorf.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start this off and ask Joe to come up and join me. I'll introduce Joe. Joe Salisbury is the Vice President of the Foundation for the Betterment of Carson City Parks and Recreation. And as you folks,
if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer those at this time.
Thank you, Vern. Are there any commissioner comments on this item? Commissioner Westergaard.
Maybe it was already in the paper as far as the article on the approval, but is there a notice going to be made to the public that the park's going to be closed?
We'll be issuing a press release in the next day or so. And then we are also going to be, as a part of the project, there will be fencing, construction fencing going up down there, and there will be notices posted down there on the construction fencing letting the public know that that this is happening. It's one of those situations where we feel from a liability standpoint we need to do that, but there's also ways to, if they, you know, it is a busy park. It does get a lot of use. And so there is the opportunity still to go to Silver Saddle Ranch and still get plenty of opportunities to hike in that same area, Riverview Park, or, of course, they can use the Morgan Mill Road River Access area. So even though they may not be able to get to that particular parking spot, there are other opportunities along the river and, of course, Riverview Park. So opportunities. Maybe it's a way to look at getting another opportunity to look at another one of our parks.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Any other comments? Any citizen comments on the Carson River Park Phase 2 construction project? Hearing, seeing none, thank you. We move to item 3D, update regarding the multipurpose athletic center. Roger.
Well, I guess continuing this sequence of good news, at the same meeting that Vern was referring to where the Board of Supervisors approved the Carson River Park bid, they also approved three of the recommendations that this body, the Park and Recreation Commission, sent and forwarded on to the Board of Supervisors. Excuse me. That included approval of the contract with Valentine or Crane for the design of the multi-purpose athletic center. It also included approving using a facility use rental agreement instead of a joint use agreement with the Boys and Girls Club regarding their use of the facility. And they also approved, according to your recommendation, an amended option to purchase the property from the Boys and Girls Club. And so they approved all three of your recommendations. Staff is basically meeting with Brent Tippetts, who's the architect from Valentine or Crane, who's been working on this project for years. We'll be meeting with him again on Friday, kind of a kickoff project meeting, and we'll be going forward from that point forward. The schedule still hasn't been completely worked out, but we hope that we'll be going to bid on this project sometime March, maybe April. April might be more realistic, and award the contract in maybe late April or early May, and hopefully begin construction this spring or summer. And so anyhow, with the assistance of the Park and Recreation Commission, we've got a project and we're going forward. So congratulations to you folks.
Congratulations all around. It's great news to hear. Supervisor Wald.
Roger, I just wanted to thank you, staff, city staff as well, for doing this. This is your project.
Well, it's a community's project, so we're happy.
I couldn't agree more. It has been a long and ongoing process, and there has been many fits and starts. And it is personally very gratifying to hear that we will be moving forward. And I would like to thank all the people involved, all the groups involved, staff, all the commissioners present and past, the supervisors present and past, mayors present and past, and everybody else who has had anything to do with getting this thing going. And I certainly look forward to a groundbreaking celebration at some point in the future. So, again, thank everyone and congratulations all around. Any other commissioner comments? Any citizen comments regarding the multipurpose athletic center? Hearing none, we move to our agenda, item 4A. Discussion only regarding the award recipients from the Foundation for the Betterment of Carson City Parks and Recreation for 2011. Joe Salisbury and Roger Mullendorf.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start this off and ask Joe to come up and join me. I'll introduce Joe. Joe Salisbury is the Vice President of the Foundation for the Betterment of Carson City Parks and Recreation. And as you folks know, if you've been on this on the Park and Recreation Commission for several years, that the Foundation for the Betterment of Carson City Parks and Recreation annually bestows awards to individuals, organizations, and businesses who have provided outstanding support for parks and recreation and cultural programs in Carson City. The designated awards are for Volunteer of the Year, Volunteer of the Years, Business of the Year, and Organization of the Years. And the recipients this year, and by the way, the ceremony will be held on Friday, November 11th, 2011, at 11 a.m. At the monument near the Pony Express Pavilion off that Sealy Loop, you know, right near where the 9/11 Memorial is located. So that'll be the ceremony. So the awards go to Volunteer of the Year goes to Ilona Stroll for the Parks for Paws for her work in organizing an advocacy group and raising funds for Carson City's soon-to-be-open first dog park at Fuji Park. You'll have an item later on, a discussion about that project. A volunteer of the years is Dr. Michael J. Fisher for his many years of support with the Carson City Parks and Recreation Department's Open Space Program, his support to help in the passage of the Quality of Life Initiative, and his longtime involvement in coaching and supporting Carson City Tiger Shark Swim Club. The business of the year goes to the Vidler Water Company for that company's donation of 39 acres of the former Hales Bells Ranch to be preserved as open space along the Carson River. Vidler Water Company also constructed a trail on the property and will soon connect Morgan Mill Road River Access Area to Riverview Park. And then the organization of the year goes to both the Kiwanis Clubs in Carson City for their support in making Carson City a more attractive community through their annual river cleanup day and for assisting with park maintenance by adopting city parks. So, Joe, is there anything you'd like to add to that, or did I
yes, I would.
Take everything from you?
Yeah, thanks. Good evening, everybody. The Park Foundation, you know, we started it in 1985 so that we could have people contribute to the parks and to be part of the park system. By whatever they donated to the park, we would acknowledge and take care of their money. We are also in with the Historical Society for Carson City. We're both on the same charter and the same, we work at the Roberts House, so we also do the Wong Nima House in the park. And so we've been very successful in having people use the Wong Nima House. And it's we will rent it for a very, very small fee to people who are not nonprofit organizations, but any nonprofit organization in the community can use the house without a charge. So we'd like to have you come to the ceremony if you can on Veterans Day out at the park, and it's not going to be very long, but we do want to recognize these people. And tonight I heard here that we have some good possibilities for next year. And thank you for this, and we do really appreciate what the people that we're recognizing every year have done.
Well, thank you. We certainly appreciate your efforts in publicity and recognition. And I know I enjoy the monument that graces Mills Park. Are there any other commissioner comments on yes. this topic? Commissioner Curtis.
I just noticed you're going to have this on 11-11-11.
That's why we picked at 11 o'clock.
Cool.
Veterans Day.
Yeah.
So Commissioner Adams.
The first time that'll ever happen. Again, yeah.
Oh, by the way, there'll be a repeat at 11 p.m.
I don't think I'll be there.
I just wanted to thank Joe. It's been a real pleasure to see you over the years, and the nominations and stuff that your group has made has been,
thank
I
you.
Think you guys really look out after the people that contribute to our community. Thank
yes.
you.
It's great to have the parks that we do. And it hasn't always been easy the past years to keep what we do have today.
That's right. Don't we know it? So, yes, we certainly appreciate the efforts to celebrate the people that rise to the top on behalf of their community and the recreation and parks that we all enjoy. So thank you very much again, and we look forward to seeing you on the 11th. Are there any?
If you've been on this on the Park and Recreation Commission for several years, that the Foundation for the Betterment of Carson City Parks and Recreation annually bestows awards to individuals, organizations, and businesses who have provided outstanding support for parks and recreation and cultural programs in Carson City. The designated awards are for Volunteer of the Year, Volunteer of the Years, Business of the Year, and Organization of the Years. And the recipients this year, and by the way, the ceremony will be held on Friday, November 11th, 2011, at 11 a.m., at the monument near the Pony Express Pavilion off that Sealy Loop, you know, right near where the 9/11 Memorial is located. So that'll be the ceremony. So the awards go to Volunteer of the Year goes to Ilona Stroll for the Parks for Paws for her work in organizing an advocacy group and raising funds for Carson City's soon-to-be-open first dog park at Fuji Park. You'll have an item later on, a discussion about that project. Volunteer of the Years is Dr. Michael J. Fisher for his many years of support with the Carson City Parks and Recreation Department's Open Space Program, his support to help in the passage of the Quality of Life Initiative, and his longtime involvement in coaching and supporting Carson City Tiger Shark Swim Club. The Business of the Year goes to the Vidler Water Company for that company's donation of 39 acres of the former Hales Bells Ranch to be preserved as open space along the Carson River. Vidler Water Company also constructed a trail on the property and will soon connect Morgan Mill Road River Access Area to Riverview Park. And then the Organization of the Year goes to both the Kiwanis Clubs in Carson City for their support in making Carson City a more attractive community through their annual river cleanup day and for assisting with park maintenance by adopting city parks. So, Joe, is there anything you'd like to add to that, or did I
yes, I would.
Take everything from you?
Yeah, thanks. Good evening, everybody. The Park Foundation, you know, we started it in 1985 so that we could have people contribute to the parks and to be part of the park system. By whatever they donated to the park, we would acknowledge and take care of their money. We are also in with the Historical Society for Carson City. We're both on the same charter and the same, we work at the Roberts House, and we also do the Wangnima House in the park. And so we've been very successful in having people use the Wangnima House. And it's we will rent it for a very, very small fee to people who are not nonprofit organizations, but any nonprofit organization in the community can use the house without a charge. So we'd like to have you come to the ceremony if you can on Veterans Day out at the park, and it's not going to be very long, but we do want to recognize these people. And tonight I heard here that we have some good possibilities for next year. And thank you for this, and we do really appreciate what the people that we're recognizing every year have done.
Well, thank you. We certainly appreciate your efforts in publicity and recognition. And I know I enjoy the monument that graces Mills Park. Are there any other commissioner comments on yes. this topic? Commissioner Curtis.
I just noticed you're going to have this on 11-11-11.
That's why we picked at 11 o'clock.
Cool.
Veterans Day.
Yeah.
So Commissioner Adams.
The first time that'll ever happen. Again, yeah.
Oh, by the way, there'll be a repeat at 11 p.m.
I don't think I'll be there.
I just wanted to thank Joe. It's been a real pleasure to see you over the years, and the nominations and stuff that your group has made has been,
thank
I
you.
Think you guys really look out after the people that contribute to our community. Thank
yes.
you.
It's great to have the parks that we do. And it hasn't always been easy the past years to keep what we do have today.
That's right. Don't we know it? So, yes, we certainly appreciate the efforts to celebrate the people that rise to the top on behalf of their community and the recreation and parks that we all enjoy. So thank you very much again, and we look forward to seeing you on the 11th. Are there any citizen comments on this topic? Hearing none, thank you very much. And we move to item 4B, presentation only, on the Children's Museum of Northern Nevada's proposed park, Mr. Jim Peckham and Roger Molendorf.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Jim. Jim Peckman is the director of the Children's Museum of Northern Nevada, and he's going to, I guess, basically describe and go over a proposed park that they're looking at building on the north side of the building. Before he gets into the details, and in your packet you have artist rendering sketches, elevations of what this park will look like. I do want to mention that in setting up this item, we referred to our Park and Recreation Master Plan. This proposed park is located in Neighborhood 15. The only park amenity located in this neighborhood is really the small park that's surrounding the Roberts House. However, the neighborhood, because it's a downtown core area and highly developed, really has limited potential for a true neighborhood park development. But this plan really provides an opportunity for this neighborhood, as well as the city in general, because I think it'd be more of a city draw than just even a neighborhood draw. In our master plan, it talks about areas in this neighborhood that could provide some recreation and leisure areas, such as just as downtown plazas and sitting areas, and I think this plan lends itself well to that opportunity as well. According to our master plan, the Carson City Master Plan, which was adopted in April of 2006, the master plan calls for activity centers that provide mixed-use activity facilities that are immediately adjacent to and accessible to neighborhoods and along major thoroughfares. Again, the vision I think that the Children's Museum have dovetails and fits very nicely with the city's master plan. So with that, I will turn it over to Jim, and he can explain in more detail what this proposal is all about.
Okay, thank you. We have been looking around at different children's museums around the country and try and get creative ideas for exhibits and whatnot, and we notice that there's an awful lot of those exhibits have, or those museums have some kind of outdoor recreational area, if you will, involved with them. And you know, some people, you know, have the large merry-go-rounds, you know, with the horses going up and down, carousels, and, you know, other sorts of things that are created in all-weather events. Typically, they've got places for kids to climb and burn off some energy and things of that sort. And certainly, we were also taking into consideration some of the downtown beautification situations that are a major focus in Carson City. So several years ago, we started kicking around the idea of, you know, how do we move forward with this? How do we try and do something? And we thought, you know, obviously there's, at one point in time, there was a motel alongside the Children's Museum that was shuttered, and we weren't sure if that was going to stay that way or not, and it has reopened. And so we were hoping that maybe that land would become available, but since it hasn't, we thought that maybe utilizing some of the current street, which is Ann Street, adjacent to the museum, and in this plan, it still reserves most of the parking there. And the three things that we're looking for is some kind of water feature. You know, up at Sparks, they've got and a number of other places, they've got little water features where it's not where the kids are necessarily going to get soaked, but there's enough water, you know, going back and forth. We're thinking of the types of things that shoots water out from one place and then it shoots water from someplace else, and it just seems to get children and adults to gravitate to that. The second thing that we wanted to make sure that we had is some kind of climbing structure. We kind of like the one that's behind the old Kmart building, which is tall and it draws an awful lot of attention to that. And then the third thing was shade, of all things, making sure that we had some kind of shade. So as I shared some of that information with an architect and John Kopelos, and we started to sketch things out, and then my
comments on this topic. Hearing none, thank you very much. And we move to item 4B, presentation only, on the Children's Museum of Northern Nevada's proposed park, Mr. Jim Peckham and Roger Molendorf.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Jim. Jim Peckman is the director of the Children's Museum of Northern Nevada, and he's going to, I guess, basically describe and go over a proposed park that they're looking at building on the north side of the building. Before he kind of gets into the details, and in your packet you have artist rendering sketches, elevations of what this park will look like. I do want to mention that before in setting up this item, we referred to our Park and Recreation Master Plan. This park, proposed park, is located in Neighborhood 15. The only park amenity located in this neighborhood is really the small park that's surrounding the Roberts House. However, the neighborhood, because it's a downtown core area and highly developed, really has limited potential for a true neighborhood park development. But this plan really provides an opportunity for this neighborhood, as well as the city in general, because I think it'd be more of a city draw than just even a neighborhood draw. In our master plan, it talks about areas in this neighborhood that could provide some recreation and leisure areas, such as just as downtown plazas and sitting areas, and I think this plan lends itself well to that opportunity as well. According to our master plan, the Carson City Master Plan, which was adopted in April of 2006, the master plan calls for activity centers that provide mixed-use activity facilities that are immediately adjacent to and accessible to neighborhoods and along major thoroughfares. Again, the vision, I think, that the Children's Museum have dovetails and fits very nicely with the city's master plan. So with that, I will turn it over to Jim, and he can explain in more detail what this proposal is all about.
Okay, thank you. We have been looking around at different children's museums around the country and try and get creative ideas for exhibits and whatnot, and we noticed that there's an awful lot of those exhibits have, or those museums have, some kind of outdoor recreational area, if you will, involved with them. And you know, some people, you know, have the large merry-go-rounds, you know, with the horses going up and down, carousels, and you know, other sorts of things that are created in all-weather events. Typically, they've got places for kids to climb and burn off some energy and things of that sort. And certainly, we were also taking into consideration some of the downtown beautification situations that are a major focus in Carson City. So several years ago, we started kicking around the idea of, you know, how do we move forward with this? How do we try and do something? And we thought, you know, obviously there's, at one point in time, there was a motel alongside the Children's Museum that was shuttered, and we weren't sure if that was going to stay that way or not, and it has reopened. And so we were hoping that maybe that land would become available, but since it hasn't, we thought that maybe utilizing some of the current street, which is Ann Street, adjacent to the museum, and in this plan, it still reserves most of the parking there. And the three things that we're looking for is some kind of water feature. You know, up at Sparks, they've got, and a number of other places, they've got little water features where it's not where the kids are necessarily going to get soaked, but there's enough water, you know, going back and forth. We're thinking of the types of things that shoots water out from one place and then it shoots water from someplace else, and it just seems to get children and adults to gravitate to that. The second thing that we wanted to make sure that we had is some kind of climbing structure. We kind of like the one that's behind the old Kmart building, which is tall and it draws an awful lot of attention to that. And then the third thing was shade, of all things, making sure that we had some kind of shade. So as I shared some of that information with an architect and John Kopelos, and we started to sketch things out, and then my step after that was to talk with Roger and to talk with Historical Society and some other people and say, all right, what are we missing? And we soon determined that, you know, if we're going to go to a park with this kind of magnitude, it probably shouldn't be necessarily controlled by the Children's Museum. We originally had it gated where the only access is if you go in the museum and come out, but that would limit the number of hours, especially in the summer, that people would be able to utilize. And then as we talked with some of the different city agencies, the thought was, well, you know, it'd be, if you're going to have water and you're going to have kids, you're probably going to need restrooms. So how are you going to let people into the museum to use the restrooms? And it's like, well, maybe we need to build restrooms on the outside. And it's like, well, that wouldn't be a bad thing. That'd be the only public restrooms in the downtown area. You know, so that would be an added potential feature. And the more we went through it, it just made sense that it probably become a city park. And then we've gone off and started to talk to some foundations that had expressed an interest in supporting us. And now we're running into some challenges because we don't own the land, the city does. If you're not aware, we rent the Children's Museum from the city. The street, obviously, is the city's property. And the more we've discussed this and move forward, the more it's become obvious that it's probably going to become a city urban park. And so for people to say, oh, yeah, we'll support your nonprofit to create something for the city, wait a minute, that doesn't quite fly. And that was some recent information that we've gotten in the last couple of weeks. But prior to that, I talked with Roger and said, you know, let's at least get this on the agenda so more people can see it. We've had it in the newspaper a couple times. To the motel adjacent to where this park would be, I've given them a copy of the initial sketches and haven't heard anything back from them, but at least made them aware that that's a possibility. The people behind the desk thought, that'll be great. Well, you know, be that many more people that might want to stay in our motel and take advantage of the park right next door. So we envision it as being, you know, rubberized asphalt or something of that sort. So it's not something we're going to be mowing grass, but hopefully low maintenance. And again, whatever architectural designs and contracts and again, the experience that the Parks and Rec organization has to make sure that it's sound construction. We originally talked about maybe having fabric shade structures and we're guided away from that, saying, and our winds, you just don't want to go there. So, you know, it's the general concept is there. There's still a lot of details that can be fine-tuned, but it's obvious in my mind that we need to work very closely with the city or hand off to the city and be in a support role or something in order to move this forward because, again, since we don't own the land, and the fact that in our conversations it probably makes the most sense to have it be a the city's urban park. So, again, we've got some renditions of the park. It's been in the newspaper a couple times. The initial view of it would be that it would run somewhere $1.5 million to be able to do that. If we're doing street widening or any of those things or any kind of other infrastructure changes within the city and in that downtown area, all that could be incorporated in and potentially provide some savings there. But it's just as we have talked with the community and talked with our members and basically every organization that we've brought it up to, their eyes light up and go, man, that'd be great. And it's within close walking distance of the proposed library. There's just, it's kitty corner from the State Museum. So it's just from a location and hopefully we'll get that appeal from the tourists that drive through. And if it's anything like my car, the kids, Dad, stop, look at there. As I've been trained, I stop and let them run around and burn off some energy before I continue my trip.
If I may inquire of council, I see this is agendized as presentation only. Does that preclude us from having any questions or discussion?
After that was to talk with Roger and to talk with Historical Society and some other people and say, all right, what are we missing? And we soon determined that, if we're going to go to a park with this kind of magnitude, it probably shouldn't be necessarily controlled by the Children's Museum. We originally had it gated where the only access is if you go in the museum and come out, but that would limit the number of hours, especially in the summer, that people would be able to utilize. And then as we talked with some of the different city agencies, the thought was, well, it'd be, if you're going to have water and you're going to have kids, you're probably going to need restrooms, so how are you going to let people into the museum to use the restrooms? And it's like, well, maybe we need to build restrooms on the outside. And it's like, well, that wouldn't be a bad thing. That'd be the only public restrooms in the downtown area. That would be an added potential feature. And the more we went through it, it just made sense that it probably become a city park. And then we've gone off and started to talk to some foundations that had expressed an interest in supporting us. And now we're running into some challenges because we don't own the land, the city does. If you're not aware, we rent the Children's Museum from the city. The street, obviously, is the city's property. And the more we've discussed this and move forward, the more it's become obvious that it's probably going to become a city urban park. And so for people to say, oh, yeah, we'll support your nonprofit to create something for the city, wait a minute, that doesn't quite fly. And that was some recent information that we've gotten in the last couple of weeks. But prior to that, I talked with Roger and said, you know, let's at least get this on the agenda so more people can see it. We've had it in the newspaper a couple times. To the motel adjacent to where this park would be, I've given them a copy of the initial sketches and haven't heard anything back from them, but at least made them aware that that's a possibility. The people behind the desk thought, that'll be great. Well, you know, be that many more people that might want to stay in our motel and take advantage of the park right next door. So we envision it as being, you know, rubberized asphalt or something of that sort. So it's not something we're going to be mowing grass, but hopefully low maintenance. And again, whatever architectural designs and contracts and again, the experience that the Parks and Rec organization has to make sure that it's sound construction. We originally talked about maybe having fabric shade structures and we're guided away from that, saying, and our winds, you just don't want to go there. So, you know, it's the general concept is there. There's still a lot of details that can be fine-tuned, but it's obvious in my mind that we need to work very closely with the city or hand off to the city and be in a support role or something in order to move this forward because, again, since we don't own the land, and the fact that in our conversations it probably makes the most sense to have it be a the city's urban park. So, again, we've got some renditions of the park. It's been in the newspaper a couple times. The initial view of it would be that it would run somewhere $1.5 million to be able to do that. If we're doing street widening or any of those things or any kind of other infrastructure changes within the city and in that downtown area, all that could be incorporated in and potentially provide some savings there. But it's just as we have talked with the community and talked with our members and basically every organization that we've brought it up to, their eyes light up and go, man, that'd be great. And it's within close walking distance of the proposed library. There's just, it's kitty corner from the State Museum. So it's just from a location and hopefully we'll get that appeal from the tourists that drive through. And if it's anything like my car, the kids, Dad, stop, look at there. As I've been trained, I stop and let them run around and burn off some energy before I continue my trip.
If I may inquire of council, I see this is agendized as presentation only. Does that preclude us from having any questions or discussion?
You can follow it up with, a few questions and comments, things like that, but it just can't become a lengthy discussion, and you can't provide, like a request for guidance in this matter.
Are there any commissioner questions, comments? Supervisor Walt?
Fabulous. I do think that the Children's Museum does need something outside, and that would be great if the other side was vacant and did come available. I think that would be perfect because I think there was plans at one time, of sketches of some sort to even go with that, and I think that would have been fabulous. This looks good. Couple concerns, though. Have you looked into the parking? Because I know, for how many parking spots there needs to be for your facility or for
I don't know what the total number of parking spots are required for a facility that size, but we basically we would lose a total of 2 parking spots with this design. And you know, frequently we've got parking behind the museum as well as alongside the museum, and then you know there's side street parking. Who knows if we'll have a city garage at some point in time, you know, depending on how the downtown redevelopment thing works. So, and if the streets are widened, they would also, or if we go to 2 lanes or 3 lane, I guess if the lanes are reduced, then it would provide some street parking as well. So we think, based on all the plans and other potential things, we think that will still work out for us.
It just, through the pictures, it looked like that you might have been losing more parking, but 2 parking spots, I don't know if that would be an issue. The other thing, you mentioned that it was 1.9 or 1.2?
Approximately 1.5.
Okay, 1.5 million.
Again, it's a guesstimate. We haven't gone through and gotten quotes or anything of that sort. We're just, you know, based on the experience of the architect.
So now would you be, because if it is a city urban park, are you looking at the city is helping funding this, or are you going to, is the Children's Museum trying to do all the fundraising for it? And then I know you're running into problems, so how can, you know what I'm, you're here, and so I guess it opens up the questions, how can it all be worked together to make sure that this does happen, I guess?
Yeah, I think that my sense is that we need to do some things from a partnership standpoint, probably applying for some different federal grants. There's a land and water grant. There's tourism grants. There's other things, and I think we probably have to go about finding them and, you know, showing that it's a joint project, if you will. But, again, based on the size of our budget, I mean, our annual budget's maybe a tenth of what this is. And so a lot of people are like, oh, man, how are you going to take on such a big project? And then the bigger complication is you don't even own the land, and it's not even going to be yours. It's going to be the city's. And basically what we would do is kind of be the caretakers of it, if you will, and trying to provide, you know, keeping it clean and you know, maintained and things of that sort is sounds like the most logical relationship that we have from that standpoint. But you know, part of the reason of bringing it to this board is to get your inputs and say, all right, how could we move forward? You know, well, first, you know, does it make sense? And then how could we move forward and make that kind of impact?
And my last, since you brought it up, does it make sense? And the Knowledge Center, I think the park overall makes a whole lot of sense. It really does. But within the plans that were approved by the Board of Supervisors for the Knowledge and Discovery Center, within those plans is a water park. And that's why I look and think if we're in one neighborhood, I don't know whether or not the Knowledge Center is in neighborhood 15 as well. But for the city then to have, you're talking maybe 3 blocks away, you're going to have 2 different water parks because that's the direction, you know, that will be going there. It's a summertime water park, and then in the winter it would be the ice skating rink. So I don't know if that's something that you've considered.
I put up with, you know, a few questions and comments, things like that, but it just can't become a lengthy discussion, and you can't provide, you know, like a request for guidance in this matter.
Are there any commissioner questions, comments? Supervisor Walt?
Fabulous. I do think the Children's Museum does need something outside, and that would be great if the other side was vacant and did come available. I think that would be perfect because I think there was plans at one time, you know, of sketches of some sort to even go with that, and I think that would have been fabulous. This looks good. Couple concerns, though. Have you looked into the parking? Because I know, like, for how many parking spots there needs to be for your facility, or for
yeah.
I don't know what the total number of parking spots are required for a facility that size, but we basically we would lose a total of 2 parking spots with this design. And you know, frequently we've got parking behind the museum as well as alongside the museum, and then you know there's side street parking. Who knows if we'll have a city garage at some point in time, you know, depending on how the downtown redevelopment thing works. So, and if the streets are widened, there would also, or if we go to 2 lanes or 3 lane, I guess if the lanes are reduced, then it would provide some street parking as well. So we think, based on all the plans and other potential things, we think that will still work out for us.
It just, through the pictures, it looked like that you might have been losing more parking, but 2 parking spots, I don't know if that would be an issue. The other thing, you mentioned that it was 1.9 or 1.2?
Approximately 1.5.
Okay, 1.5 million.
Again, it's a guesstimate. We haven't gone through and gotten quotes or anything of that sort. We're just, you know, based on the experience of the architect.
So now would you be, because if it is a city urban park, are you looking at the city is helping funding this, or are you going to, is the Children's Museum trying to do all the fundraising for it? And then I know you're running into problems, so how can, you know what I'm, you're here, and so I guess it opens up the questions, how can it all be worked together to make sure that this does happen, I guess?
Yeah, I think that my sense is that we need to do some things from a partnership standpoint, probably applying for some different federal grants. There's a land and water grant. There's tourism grants. There's other things, and I think we probably have to go about finding them and, you know, showing that it's a joint project, if you will. But, again, based on the size of our budget, I mean, our annual budget's maybe a tenth of what this is. And so a lot of people are like, oh, man, how are you going to take on such a big project? And then the bigger complication is you don't even own the land, and it's not even going to be yours. It's going to be the city's. And basically what we would do is kind of be the caretakers of it, if you will, and trying to provide, you know, keeping it clean and you know, maintained and things of that sort is sounds like the most logical relationship that we have from that standpoint. But you know, part of the reason of bringing it to this board is to get your inputs and say, all right, how could we move forward? You know, well, first, you know, does it make sense? And then how could we move forward and make that kind of impact?
And my last, since you brought it up, does it make sense? And the Knowledge Center, I think the park overall makes a whole lot of sense. It really does. But within the plans that were approved by the Board of Supervisors for the Knowledge and Discovery Center, within those plans is a water park. And that's why I look and think if we're in one neighborhood, I don't know whether or not the Knowledge Center is in neighborhood 15 as well. But for the city then to have, you're talking maybe 3 blocks away, you're going to have 2 different water parks because that's the direction, you know, that will be going there. It's a summertime water park, and then in the winter it would be the ice skating rink. So I don't know if that's something that you've considered, and if so, what were your thoughts of having the 2, I guess? And then beyond that, I know you mentioned that others are saying, you know, oh, it's a city park. That's not a bad thing. I mean, the city, and I would hope that they're not thinking that it, because I do think that we do a fabulous job with the parks that we have and the support that we've given to others as well. So, but I guess the first would be the water park.
First I heard that was a part of the plan for the Knowledge Center. So maybe I'm not reading the paper well enough. So that's new news to me. I hadn't heard of any of that going on. And certainly the only, I wasn't trying to express a negative that it might be a city park. It's just we were somehow thinking we could be autonomous and moving forward with it. And soon realize, no, it's not something that we can really drive and be autonomous with. And I think the city groups that we've talked with, it's like, oh, and you're going to fundraise for it and you're going to go make that happen? Godspeed, man. Take off. Have fun. But it appears that they were going to be limited in being able to do that. So,
Commissioner Curtis.
Yes, a couple comments or questions. Number one, I was looking at the sketches, and I was a little concerned about the size of the park and having a water feature in there because they're immensely popular. You're going to have a, you know, talk about the fishing derby or whatever, you're going to have a big crowd there. So I think if there's two of them, you know, I don't see that as a real big problem myself, because I was concerned that was even enough room in that park as you have it. But we spoke after the first Let's Move meeting, and to me this is kind of an ideal project in the sense that this is what a lot of communities have done, is, you know, for outdoor exercise, you know, things for the kids to do, this kind of thing. There are, you know, grants that could be applied for, and might be something that they'll take on. I don't know, but yeah, hopefully you'll get a lot of help. And, you know, the fact that it is owned by the city and operated by the city, whatever it is, doesn't, I don't think it precludes getting grants at all.
Commissioner Westergaard.
I would just suggest, not as the commission, but just as one person, that you made both of you have a conversation with the Knowledge and Discovery Center people, because it was approved by the Board of Supervisors, and it does include a recreation element of a splash pad that will also be an ice rink. And so, and if you're out there raising money, you may be talking to the same people as well. So I would just suggest a conversation.
I concur. First, I want to thank you and the Children's Museum for devising this notion and advancing it, and for bringing it to us, sharing it with the community. This is not too far from where I live. And I pass through that area quite a bit, and certainly it is an underutilized corridor back there behind the museum. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a very exciting opportunity. I guess the couple of things that I would come to my mind is, one, what would there be, and again, this is, you know, very early in the concept, but any potential impacts to any potential development of the V&T Roundhouse lot, if there were to be any, potential applications for that large piece of vacant ground in our town, and then with Ann Street, you know, butting into that. So I guess that would need to be, you know, fully explored, certainly. In terms of the water element, you had mentioned, you know, conceptually, you know, sort of the shooting things here and there, and that would be quite a bit different from a splash pad. And as we all know, it gets quite hot in this town for quite an extended period of time, and I think, if you know, in a perfect world, it would not be an overkill or a luxury to have two different water elements that would benefit our young people and our guests and tourists and citizens.
So what were your thoughts of having the two, I guess? And then beyond that, I know you mentioned that others are saying, you know, oh, it's a city park. That's not a bad thing. I mean, the city, and I would hope that they're not thinking that it, because I do think that we do a fabulous job with the parks that we have and the support that we've given to others as well. So, but I guess the first would be the water park.
First I heard that was a part of the plan for the Knowledge Center. So maybe I'm not reading the paper well enough. So that's new news to me. I hadn't heard of any of that going on. And certainly the only, I wasn't trying to express a negative that it might be a city park. It's just we were somehow thinking we could be autonomous and moving forward with it, and soon realized, no, it's not something that we can really drive and be autonomous with. And I think the city groups that we've talked with, it's like, oh, and you're going to fundraise for it, and you're going to go make that happen? Godspeed, man. Take off. Have fun. But it appears that they were going to be limited in being able to do that. So,
Commissioner Curtis.
Yes, a couple comments or questions. Number one, I was looking at the sketches, and I was a little concerned about the size of the park and having a water feature in there because they're immensely popular. You're going to have a, you know, talk about the fishing derby or whatever, you're going to have a big crowd there. So I think if there's two of them, you know, I don't see that as a real big problem myself because I was concerned that was even enough room in that park as you have it. But we spoke after the first Let's Move meeting, and to me, this is kind of an ideal project in the sense that this is what a lot of communities have done, is, you know, for outdoor exercise, you know, things for the kids to do, this kind of thing. There are, you know, grants that could be applied for and might be something that they'll take on. I don't know. But yeah, hopefully you'll get a lot of help. And, you know, the fact that it is owned by the city and operated by the city, whatever it is, doesn't, I don't think it precludes getting grants at all.
Commissioner Westergaard.
I would just suggest not as the commission, but just as one person, that you made both of you have a conversation with the Knowledge and Discovery Center people, because it was approved by the Board of Supervisors, and it does include a recreation element of a splash pad that will also be an ice rink. And so, and if you're out there raising money, you may be talking to the same people as well. So I would just suggest a conversation.
I concur. First, I want to thank you and the Children's Museum for devising this notion and advancing it and for bringing it to us, sharing it with the community. This is not too far from where I live, and I pass through that area quite a bit, and certainly it is an underutilized corridor back there behind the museum, and it sounds like a very exciting opportunity. I guess the couple of things that I would come to my mind as one, what would there be, and again, this is, you know, very early in the concept, but any potential impacts to any potential development of the V&T Roundhouse lot, if there were to be any, potential applications for that large piece of vacant ground in our town. And then with Ann Street, you know, butting into that. So I guess that would need to be, you know, fully explored, certainly. In terms of the water element, you had mentioned, you know, conceptually, you know, sort of the shooting things here and there. And that would be quite a bit different from a splash pad. And as we all know, it gets quite hot in this town for quite an extended period of time. And I think if, you know, in a perfect world, it would not be an overkill or a luxury to have two different water elements that would benefit our young people and our guests and tourists and citizens. If we had a true, you know, splash pad where kids can slide around in one spot, and hey, their family's walking down the street and a couple blocks away, hey, here's another thing where, you know, it's like the old Brooklyn fire hydrant thing, you know, in the summertime shooting around. But it's an engineered, but you know, the same concept of just being, you know, splashed and zapped randomly with water, in a less involved structure than a splash pad. So, also, I guess I would just, you know, in that context, I'd like to say, and correct me if this is guidance of a guidance nature, but that there might be a solar energy component to heating the water or processing the water that might qualify for some grant you know, recreation and solar energy. I know the school district has benefited immensely from energy rebates from Nevada Energy with solar rebates, and so certainly, you know, that would be something we would like to explore there. But otherwise, you know, those are my comments. And again, I thank you, and I think it's an exciting opportunity, and look forward to further discussion, further work. Any further commissioner comments? Commissioner Westergaard.
I just wanted to add to that. I think it's a terrific idea to have an outdoor feature at the Children's Museum. I think that's something that's been missing. And my suggestion was just along the lines of the what I refer to as the Las Vegas mindset that's worked well for Vegas gaming. That is, what's good for you is good for me. So if you just have conversations with people downtown that have, you know, similar interests that you do and provide similar services or opportunities, that was just my suggestion.
Commissioner Adams.
I just want to second Todd's statement there. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's worth looking into.
Great. Any other commissioner comments? Are there any citizen comments regarding the presentation on the Children's Museum of Northern Nevada's proposed park? Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Peckham. Godspeed with your efforts. And we now move to item 4C, discussion only regarding the 2010-2011 Arlington Square ice skating season and the upcoming season. Mr. Joel Dunn.
For the record, Joel Dunn, Carson City Recreation. Thank you. It's been, I think, quite a few meetings since I've had the opportunity to be in front of you, but I'm here to report on the operations for the 2010 and 11 ice skating rink. As you're aware, we entered into a cooperative operational agreement 3 years ago with the Office of Business Development and Redevelopment. Last year, Carson City Recreation took on the operation of the ice rink solely as a program for Carson City. And in such, we're making every effort to make it 100% cost recovery like all the rest of the programs that we offer to the community. I'll go through, without going through too much detail, as you know, I put in a detailed budget report that would include all expenditures to the penny, all revenues, and also the estimated salaries. As you can see, we'll talk first about the staffing costs for the 2010 and 11 operating season. We were actually within 2% of our estimated $31,800 in staffing costs. We cut the staffing down from the 2009-10 operating season down a little over $2,800. In doing that, we actually extended the season. Although we did have some problems with the weather last year and we had a few issues with some equipment that we took care of throughout the season, we did have some downtime, but we extended the season. We had a full 11 weeks last year. Continuing on the revenue, we were up 29.2% in revenue from the previous season, up a little over $17,000. Now, one of the big changes, when we were looking at the operations of an ice rink, we've, throughout the first couple of years, the first year, if you remember, we purchased some equipment, some sound equipment, some lighting equipment that we actually purchased, and tents, for less than we were looking at being able to rent them for. So now we've not only owned them, we've been able to use them for quite a few community events over the last 2 years. This last year, we jumped in full bore, and we now own an ice rink. Rather than renting an ice rink, we purchased for $5,000 more than the rental the previous year. We
had a true, you know, splash pad where kids can slide around in one spot, and hey, their family's walking down the street and a couple blocks away. Hey, here's another thing where, you know, it's like the old Brooklyn fire hydrant thing, you know, in the summertime shooting around. But on a, in a plan, you know, I say it's an engineered, but the, you know, the same concept of just being, you know, splashed and zapped randomly with water, in a less involved structure than a splash pad. So, also, I guess I would just, you know, in that context, I'd like to say, and correct me if this is guidance of a guidance nature, but that there might be a solar energy component to heating the water or processing the water that might qualify for some grant you know, recreation and solar energy. I know the school district has benefited immensely from energy rebates from Nevada Energy with solar rebates, and so certainly, you know, that would be something we would like to explore there. But otherwise, you know, those are my comments. And again, I thank you, and I think it's an exciting opportunity, and look forward to further discussion, further work. Any further commissioner comments? Commissioner Westergaard.
I just wanted to add to that. I think it's a terrific idea to have an outdoor feature at the Children's Museum. I think that's something that's been missing. And my suggestion was just along the lines of what I refer to as the Las Vegas mindset that's worked well for Vegas gaming. That is, what's good for you is good for me. So if you just have conversations with people downtown that have, you know, similar interests that you do and provide similar services or opportunities, that was just my suggestion.
Commissioner Adams.
I just want to second Todd's statement there. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's worth looking into.
Great. Any other commissioner comments? Are there any citizen comments regarding the presentation on the Children's Museum of Northern Nevada's proposed park? Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Peckham. Godspeed with your efforts. And we now move to item 4C, discussion only regarding the 2010-2011 Arlington Square ice skating season and the upcoming season. Mr. Joel Dunn.
For the record, Joel Dunn, Carson City Recreation. Thank you. It's been, I think, quite a few meetings since I've had the opportunity to be in front of you, but I'm here to report on the operations for the 2010 and 11 ice skating rink. As you're aware, we entered into a cooperative operational agreement 3 years ago with the Office of Business Development and Redevelopment. Last year, Carson City Recreation took on the operation of the ice rink solely as a program for Carson City. And in such, we're making every effort to make it 100% cost recovery like all the rest of the programs that we offer to the community. I'll go through, without going through too much details, you know, I put in a detailed budget report that would include all expenditures to the penny, all revenues, and also the estimated salaries. As you can see, we'll talk first about the staffing costs for the 2010 and 11 operating season. We were actually within 2% of our estimated $31,800 in staffing costs. We cut the staffing down from the 2009-10 operating season down a little over $2,800. In doing that, we actually extended the season. Although we did have some problems with the weather last year and we had a few issues with some equipment that we took care of throughout the season, we did have some downtime, but we extended the season. We had a full 11 weeks last year. Continuing on the revenue, we are up 29.2% in revenue from the previous season, up a little over $17,000. Now, one of the big changes, when we were looking at the operations of an ice rink, we've, throughout the first couple of years, the first year, if you remember, we purchased some equipment, some sound equipment, some lighting equipment that we actually purchased, and tents, for less than we were looking at being able to rent them for. So now we've not only owned them, we've been able to use them for quite a few community events over the last 2 years. This last year, we jumped in full bore, and we now own an ice rink. Rather than renting an ice rink, we purchased for $5,000 more than the rental the previous year. We actually bought an ice rink from the Philippines, of all places, not Canada. And there were a few things that were unexpected that, once again, we lost a few days last year with we had some breaks in the tubing that's required to freeze the ice. And, you know, we have a great cooperative agreement. Not only everyone in the city jumps in, Public Works, Building Department, Parks and Recreation. And the minute that we had problems with the ice, all hands were on deck and we got it taken care of and got people back on the ice. But we did purchase the ice rink. That ice rink included the chiller and all of the dasher boards. So Carson City is officially now in the ice rink business for the foreseeable future. We also looked at the opportunity. Part of the rental agreement was the skates that came in. We could have gone out and rented the skates, or we could look at potentially purchasing the skates, and we opted to go ahead and purchase the skates for a little over $20,000. We recaptured 75% of that that outlay in the first year. We bought 300 skates from youth size 2 all the way up to an adult size 14. About 70% of those skates are actually figure skates, and the remaining skates are referred to as a hockey skate. One of the ideas based on staff recommendations was not to get figure skates that look like figure skates. We actually had the majority, the 2 years ago, everybody wanted the hockey skates because the figure skates just weren't the attractive skate you wanted to go out and look very athletic with. They were great for the figure skaters, but we did buy a figure skate that looks kind of like a sports shoe. And we bought top of the line. It worked out terrific. We had nothing but compliments on the purchase of the skate. And as you can tell, the purchase of the rink and the skates is going to lead us in the future to actually making money with this ice rink and not having it subsidized by the general fund. The participation last year was up 16.7%. In the 2009-10 season, we had 8,222 paid skaters. We were up to 9,598 skaters last year. Moving ahead, I'll kind of go into the 2011 and 12 season and some of the changes that we're making for this upcoming season, and then I'll answer questions for both of the seasons if that's okay. If you're looking at the estimated budget for the 2011 and 12 season, a couple of the big ticket items, although we own the rink now, we're going to spend $15,000 and replace all of the glycol tubes. Glycol tubes are probably one of the most essential pieces of making ice other than the chiller. And we actually had all of the glycol tubes delivered today, and we're starting to put together the grid system that goes underneath the ice. The quality of the grid system that we bought locally, all of the product was bought from a local business, it far surpasses the quality of what we actually purchased from the Philippines, and it comes with a 25-year guarantee. So that will increase the efficiency of making the ice, and hopefully we have no issues with the equipment in the future. Going down, I could break it all out, but it's a pretty detailed budget, but overall you can see that we're increasing our revenue. We've got a projected revenue increase of about 17%, and I know that that's a little aggressive, but based on what we lost in days last year and some packages that we're going to put together this year, I think that that's actually going to work out, and I think I'm generally conservative in my numbers, and I come in and I'm happy to report more revenue year to year, and I think that will actually be the case. But with all said and done, we're looking at not having any subsidy come from the general fund, and even with the $15,000 spent this year for new glycol tubes, we're looking at being in the black for the operations. Moving ahead, we'll obviously look at having an opportunity of making money and offsetting the operational costs of some of the other programs within Parks and Recreation. Some of the changes for the 2011-2012 season, we're going to extend and do an additional session on Saturday and Sunday. We've opened up at 1 o'clock the last couple of years. We're going to go ahead and open up and do a 10 o'clock session. Once again, that's just based on our participants and their requests. We're going to make some changes aesthetically to the property there that the Nugget owns that we get to utilize. And, you know, every year we've increased the aesthetically pleasing effect of having an ice rink. Bought an ice rink from the Philippines, of all places, not Canada. And there were a few things that were unexpected that, once again, we lost a few days last year with we had some breaks in the tubing that's required to freeze the ice. And, you know, we have a great cooperative agreement. Not only everyone in the city jumps in, Public Works, Building Department, Parks and Recreation. And the minute that we had problems with the ice, all hands were on deck and we got it taken care of and got people back on the ice. But we did purchase the ice rink. That ice rink included the chiller and all of the dasher boards. So Carson City is officially now in the ice rink business for the foreseeable future. We also looked at the opportunity. Part of the rental agreement was the skates that came in. We could have gone out and rented the skates, or we could look at potentially purchasing the skates, and we opted to go ahead and purchase the skates for a little over $20,000. We recaptured 75% of that that outlay in the first year. We bought 300 skates from youth size 2 all the way up to an adult size 14. About 70% of those skates are actually figure skates, and the remaining skates are referred to as a hockey skate. One of the ideas based on staff recommendations was not to get figure skates that look like figure skates. We actually had the majority, the 2 years ago, everybody wanted the hockey skates because the figure skates just weren't the attractive skate you wanted to go out and look very athletic with. They were great for the figure skaters, but we did buy a figure skate that looks kind of like a sports shoe. And we bought top of the line. It worked out terrific. We had nothing but compliments on the purchase of the skate. And as you can tell, the purchase of the rink and the skates is going to lead us in the future to actually making money with this ice rink and not having it subsidized by the general fund. The participation last year was up 16.7%. In the 2009-10 season, we had 8,222 paid skaters. We were up to 9,598 skaters last year. Moving ahead, I'll kind of go into the 2011 and 12 season and some of the changes that we're making for this upcoming season, and then I'll answer questions for both of the seasons if that's okay. If you're looking at the estimated budget for the 2011 and 12 season, a couple of the big ticket items, although we own the rink now, we're going to spend $15,000 and replace all of the glycol tubes. Glycol tubes are probably one of the most essential pieces of making ice other than the chiller. And we actually had all of the glycol tubes delivered today, and we're starting to put together the grid system that goes underneath the ice. The quality of the grid system that we bought locally, all of the product was bought from a local business, it far surpasses the quality of what we actually purchased from the Philippines, and it comes with a 25-year guarantee. So that will increase the efficiency of making the ice, and hopefully we have no issues with the equipment in the future. Going down, I could break it all out, but it's a pretty detailed budget, but overall you can see that we're increasing our revenue. We've got a projected revenue increase of about 17%, and I know that that's a little aggressive, but based on what we lost in days last year and some packages that we're going to put together this year, I think that that's actually going to work out, and I think I'm generally conservative in my numbers, and I come in and I'm happy to report more revenue year to year, and I think that will actually be the case. But with all said and done, we're looking at not having any subsidy come from the general fund, and even with the $15,000 spent this year for new glycol tubes, we're looking at being in the black for the operations. Moving ahead, we'll obviously look at having an opportunity of making money and offsetting the operational costs of some of the other programs within Parks and Recreation. Some of the changes for the 2011-2012 season, we're going to extend and do an additional session on Saturday and Sunday. We've opened up at 1 o'clock the last couple of years. We're going to go ahead and open up and do a 10 o'clock session. Once again, that's just based on our participants and their requests. We're going to make some changes aesthetically to the property there that the Nugget owns that we get to utilize. And, you know, every year we've increased the aesthetically pleasing effect of having an ice rink downtown. This year, rather than having a 6-foot fence surrounding the entire west side, we're going to have a 6-foot fence surrounding the chiller and just some of our equipment on site. The rest of the site will have a 3-foot fence. So everywhere you drive around the site, you'll be able to see the rink and all of the people on the ice. Some of the questions that come up are, you know, can you bring your own skates? Absolutely. Bring your own skates. You'll pay the admission price. You won't pay the rental of the skate. Speaking of admission price, we're going to stay the same as we did last year. It's $7 general admission for adults, $5 for the youth, and $3 for the skate rental. It's a very affordable family activity. We do have an after-school skate special. And for $5, you can come between 3 and 6, Monday through Thursday. That $5 includes your skates and a hot beverage. So it was very successful the last couple of years. We've tried a couple of different packages, and that by far was probably the most important change that we made in the operations. New this year, the entire recreation division has gone to an online registration process, which will give us the opportunity, not only here, but at, you know, our concessions and off-site properties, to accept debit and credit cards. It was a big issue with people coming down without having cash in hand and having to go somewhere and get cash to come back. So we will have the opportunity of using their debit card on site. Lessons, we provide flyers for there. We have, it's surprising how many people within our community were professional figure skaters at some time or hockey players, and they want to, you know, help teach the kids, and we'll put up flyers. Although we don't provide somebody, I don't have a single staff member that I would put on skates and officially want to teach anybody anything with it. So, I know. I gave it a shot last year again. Group rates and parties, yeah, we do have a couple of tents that we'll rent, and we will rent outside of the operational hours the entire rink if somebody wanted to do a corporate party or, we have some special skate sessions with the Boys and Girls Club and also the Latchkey programs. Extremely successful and very affordable. You can contact Dixie Reed with the Parks and Recreation Department in regard to parties and group rates. Parking. Although I think that people are concerned about the parking, there is ample parking throughout the entire downtown. That's one of the goals of having this ice rink downtown, not only for it to be a program in Carson City that has upwards of 10,000 people coming down to skate, but is to get people downtown. So if you have to walk a block or two, enjoy and look around and see all the shops. You know, I actually have to tell you, I'm born and raised in Carson, and I was driving behind the rink yesterday with my wife, and there's a couple of shops that I had never noticed. So take the opportunity when you're down at the rink and look around. Sherry knew they were there. She's the shopper in the family. And food. You know, although the intent is to have people come down and skate and then go to the restaurants and the businesses, we do provide a very limited concession stand at the rink. We'll have hot cocoa, coffee, and some candy bars, but that's it. We're not, no hot food, very limited. We do want you to have the opportunity during your three-hour session that you skate to have a snack and a hot cocoa, but we're not going to feed you a hot dog or a hamburger. So with that, I'll entertain any questions and any.
Thank you. Are there Commissioner Walt?
Glad to hear that it's going to be opening this month. And second, will this equipment that we purchased be able to then transfer to the proposed ice skating rink with the Knowledge and Discovery Center? You will be able to use the same?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're making changes. We're going to actually put an oil cooler. It's a 90-ton chiller. It's definitely adequate. The size of the rink is significantly bigger than what we've rented in the past. We actually ended up with a 53 by 103-foot rink. I think that's about as big as you need. If you get any bigger, then you start getting into the hockey rink size. And if we start programming this rather than having it as a community ice rink, I think we'll, you know, have some problems. But by all means, there's two different types of ice rinks. This is, a sandbox that we create with Public Works and the Parks Department. The glycol tubes run on top, and there's about 2 to 3 inches of ice. You know, for a permanent rink, we'd probably want to look at changing and putting that grid, the current grid that we purchased, into concrete. And then the ice would be on top of that, so it would be a permanent rink. But by all means, the chiller could be used, dasher boards could be reused, and those skates could be reused. Mm-hmm. Downtown, this year, rather than having a 6-foot fence surrounding the entire west side, we're going to have a 6-foot fence surrounding the chiller and just some of our equipment on site. The rest of the site will have a 3-foot fence. So everywhere you drive around the site, you'll be able to see the rink and all of the people on the ice. Some of the questions that come up are, you know, can you bring your own skates? Absolutely. Bring your own skates. You'll pay the admission price. You won't pay the rental of the skate. Speaking of admission price, we're going to stay the same as we did last year. It's $7 general admission for adults, $5 for the youth, and $3 for the skate rental. It's a very affordable family activity. We do have an after-school skate special, and for $5, you can come between 3 and 6, Monday through Thursday. That $5 includes your skates and a hot beverage. So it was very successful the last couple of years. We've tried a couple of different packages, and that by far was probably the most important change that we made in the operations. New this year, the entire Recreation Division has gone to an online registration process, which will give us the opportunity, not only here, but at, you know, our concessions and off-site properties, to accept debit and credit cards. It was a big issue with people coming down without having cash in hand and having to go somewhere and get cash to come back. So we will have the opportunity of using their debit card on site. Lessons, we provide flyers for there. We have, it's surprising how many people within our community were professional figure skaters at some time or hockey players, and they want to, you know, help teach the kids, and we'll put up flyers. Although we don't provide somebody, I don't have a single staff member that I would put on skates and officially want to teach anybody anything with it. So, I gave it a shot last year again. Group rates and parties, yeah, we do have a couple of tents that we'll rent, and we will rent outside of the operational hours the entire rink if somebody wanted to do a corporate party or, we have some special skate sessions with the Boys and Girls Club and also the Latchkey programs. Extremely successful and very affordable. You can contact Dixie Reed with the Parks and Recreation Department in regard to parties and group rates. Parking, although I think that people are concerned about the parking, there is ample parking throughout the entire downtown. That's one of the goals of having this ice rink downtown, not only for it to be a program in Carson City that has upwards of 10,000 people coming down to skate, but is to get people downtown. So if you have to walk a block or two, enjoy and look around and see all the shops. You know, I actually have to tell you, I'm born and raised in Carson, and I was driving behind the rink yesterday with my wife, and there's a couple of shops that I had never noticed. So take the opportunity when you're down at the rink and look around. Sherry knew they were there. She's the shopper in the family. Food. You know, although the intent is to have people come down and skate and then go to the restaurants and the businesses, we do provide a very limited concession stand at the rink. We'll have hot cocoa, coffee, and some candy bars, but that's it. We're not, no hot food, very limited. We do want you to have the opportunity during your three-hour session that you skate to have a snack and a hot cocoa, but we're not going to feed you a hot dog or a hamburger. So with that, I'll entertain any questions and any.
Thank you. Are there Commissioner Walt?
Glad to hear that it's going to be opening this month. And second, will this equipment that we purchased be able to then transfer to the proposed ice skating rink with the Knowledge and Discovery Center? You will be able to use the same?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're making changes. We're going to actually put an oil cooler. It's a 90-ton chiller. It's definitely adequate. The size of the rink is significantly bigger than what we've rented in the past. We actually ended up with a 53 by 103-foot rink. I think that's about as big as you need. If you get any bigger, then you start getting into the hockey rink size. And if we start programming this rather than having it as a community ice rink, I think we'll, you know, have some problems. But by all means, there's two different types of ice rinks. This is, a sandbox that we create with Public Works and the Parks Department. The glycol tubes run on top, and there's about 2 to 3 inches of ice. You know, for a permanent rink, we'd probably want to look at changing and putting that grid, the current grid that we purchased, into concrete, and then the ice would be on top of that. So it would be a permanent rink. But by all means, the chiller could be used, dasher boards could be reused, and those skates could be reused.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Curtis.
The season will be the same.
Yeah, we're looking at running again, you know, the 11 to 12 weeks, and depending on how the weather is, we had, you know, a horrible winter in December and had a lot of snow on that ice, and January, we ended up with 70-degree temperatures throughout the first couple weeks of February, but we were still able to stay open and continue. As long as we have people coming out, we're covering our costs, we'll stay open as long as we can, and the Nugget's been willing to let us stay on there all the way through the end of February.
Well, that's great to hear, and I know I look forward to there being no subsidy this year and to another successful season. Every year the thing gets more popular, gets less expensive, gets more refined, and you know, there's just improvements are made, and it's become a more pleasurable experience each year. And I know, I've passed through there many, many times and seen many happy people on their way to or coming out of or at the site enjoying it. I know I will take the risk of putting words in Commissioner Smolenski's mouth, but knowing that he appreciates and is very excited about the upcoming season as well. So, yeah, when you need the top-notch lesson giver, give him a call. I just wanted to, again, I mentioned last month regarding to the dasherboards and the marketing thereof, I'd certainly want to pitch in any assistance I might be able to provide. So please keep me in mind and try to get the most dollars out of that opportunity as possible. So, again, as always, thank you very much for a job well done. Any other commissioner comments? Any comments from the general public regarding the Arlington Square ice skating season? Please.
I just was wondering if has any thought been given to bleachers or grandstands or something like that where people can sit and observe? Because whenever I'm down there covering something, it seems like there are a lot of people just standing there because they enjoy watching.
We just need to have you identify yourself.
Later. Oh, Sandy Hoover, Nevada Appeal. Sorry.
Great. And it's actually a question that came up 2 years ago. We have on the site plan two sets of bleachers that we put in. And we found that not a lot of the parents were using the bleachers. It becomes problematic having the bleachers on site when we have a lot of snow with the snow removal. We were having to move bleachers that were taking tremendous man hours and a lot of people. Now, I can say that in the site plan, Scott Fehrenbrook and myself and Bob Keith were looking over the site plan today. We have a meeting tomorrow, and we do intend on having some bleachers this year, and we'll create an area that we hopefully don't have issues with snow removal.
Thank you. I'll hold my thoughts till the end of the meeting. That's a different peripheral but different topic. So, any other questions? Thank you very much. We now move to item 4D, discussion only regarding the opening of the Fuji Park Dog Park and related dog rules and policies. Scott Farnbrook and Roger Mollendorf.
Again, for the record, Scott Fehrenbrook, Director of Operations. I gave you a brief status report in your packet. This is a little more detail as to where we're at with the dog park. The dog park is located at the undeveloped west end of Fuji Park and is just under 2 acres in size. It consists of two separate fence sections. The larger section takes up about two-thirds of the facility, and it's for the larger dogs over 30 pounds, and it will be posted as such. And the remaining one-third is for the smaller dogs under 30 pounds. The surface is a decomposed granite, so there is no irrigated turf at the park. The grading of the park and fence.
Mr. Curtis.
The season will be the same.
Yeah, we're looking at running again, the 11 to 12 weeks, and depending on how the weather is, we had, a horrible winter in December and had a lot of snow on that ice, and January, we ended up with 70-degree temperatures throughout the first couple weeks of February, but we were still able to stay open and continue. As long as we have people coming out, we're covering our costs. We'll stay open as long as we can, and the Nugget's been willing to let us stay on there all the way through the end of February.
Well, that's great to hear, and I know I look forward to there being no subsidy this year and to another successful season. Every year the thing gets more more popular, gets more gets less expensive, gets more refined, and you know, there's just improvements are made, and it's just it's become a more pleasurable experience each year. And I know I've passed through there many times and seen many happy people on their way to or coming out of or at the site enjoying it. I know I will take the risk of putting words in Commissioner Smolenski's mouth, but knowing that he appreciates and is very excited about the upcoming season as well. So yeah, when you need the top notch lesson giver, give him a call. I just wanted to again, I mentioned last month regarding to the Dasher boards and the marketing thereof. I certainly want to pitch in any assistance I might be able to provide. So please keep me in mind and try to get the most dollars out of that opportunity as possible. So, again, as always, thank you very much for a job well done. Any other commissioner comments?
Really good job.
Any comments from the general public regarding the Arlington Square ice skating season?
Yes.
Please.
I just was wondering if has any thought been given to bleachers or grandstands or something like that where people can sit and observe? Because whenever I'm down there covering something, it seems like there are a lot of people just standing there because they enjoy watching.
We just need to have you identify yourself.
Oh, Sandy Hoover, Nevada Appeal. Sorry.
Great. And it's actually a question that came up 2 years ago. We have on the site plan two sets of bleachers that we put in, and we found that not a lot of the parents were using the bleachers. It becomes problematic having the bleachers on site when we have a lot of snow with the snow removal. We were having to move bleachers that were taking tremendous man hours and a lot of people. Now, I can say that in the site plan, Scott Fehrenbrook and myself and Bob Keith were looking over the site plan today. We have a meeting tomorrow, and we do intend on having some bleachers this year, and we'll create an area that we hopefully don't have issues with snow removal.
Thank you. I'll hold my thoughts till the end of the meeting. That's a different peripheral but different topic. So, any other questions? Thank you very much. We now move to item 4D, discussion only regarding the opening of the Fuji Park Dog Park and related dog rules and policies. Scott Farnbrook and Roger Mollendorf.
Again, for the record, Scott Fehrenbrook, Director of Operations. I gave you a brief status report in your packet. This is a little more detail as to where we're at with the dog park. The dog park is located at the undeveloped west end of Fuji Park and is just under 2 acres in size. It consists of two separate fence sections. The larger section takes up about two-thirds of the facility, and it's for the larger dogs over 30 pounds, and it will be posted as such. And the remaining one-third is for the smaller dogs under 30 pounds. The surface is a decomposed granite, so there is no irrigated turf at the park. The grading of the park and fencing is already installed, and the size is just under 2 total acres. And we've just recently planted 12 large trees in both sections of the park. And we have a drip irrigation system installed, and at each tree we have a protective square split rail wood fence to protect each tree in the park individually. We have 4 park benches that have been installed. We have 2 of those in each section of the dog park. And a watering station is in each section of the dog park with a frost-free hydrant, and it has a rock base for drainage. We have two disposable Mutt-Mitt stations in each area, and that's for people to clean up after the dogs. And we have signage, obviously, telling people that they do need to clean up after their animal. Designated parking spaces are on the east and the north sides of the park. Things we still have to do to open the park, which we anticipate opening next week, sometime would be to install more signs. We need to install a bear-proof trash receptacle. We need to place concrete culvert play features in both sections. What we did was we obtained some concrete culverts from the Public Works Department that they don't need anymore. So we're going to piece those together, and we're going to put them in both the large and the small dog areas, give them something to play with. In the future, as more funding becomes available, what we'd like to see is some shade structures, at least a shade shelter in each section of the park, one in the large dog area and one in the small dog area. We'd like to have more park benches in there. We talked about picnic tables in the dog park at one time, but we met with the Parks for Paws people, and they preferred not to have the picnic tables in the park because we don't allow food or drink in the park, which I'll get to when I talk about the rules and regs. And so we thought that that might send a little message, wrong message to people thinking that they could come picnic in the dog park. One of the things that the Parks for Paws people thought that they would like to see is a more granular surface in the park. And right now we have a decomposed granite, which is basically what the natural surface is right now. And maybe down the road they would like to import a more granular surface that they would, be a better surface for the dogs and provide better drainage in the park too. One of the things we talked about in the future would be to add some drinking fountains, but we can't do that right now because we need a sewer line at the facility to be legal by health codes to install a drinking fountain. So if in the future we get the funding, we'd like to install that, and then also the sewer line that goes from the restroom at Fuji Park to the dog park. The dog park, like I said, is anticipated to be made available and open to the public sometime next week. We will post that particular date once we know the specific date in the park. Our plan is that once we open the off-leash dog park, then we would post in the grass area of Fuji Park that that dogs can still remain in the grass area of Fuji Park, but they must be on a leash at all times. The only exception to that would be is if we have a dog show or a dog competition where the dogs need to be off-leash. This project, as the commission well knows, could not have happened without the efforts of the Parks for Paws group, and especially Ilona Struhl, who's the leader of the group. They've already pumped in more than $20,000 towards the dog park to date, and they're still out raising funds to get more amenities for the dog park. So hats off to them. They are looking at a more formal grand opening. We're going to do a soft opening, this fall. But they're looking at a more formal grand opening sometime in the spring of 2012. And sometime down the road, we don't know when that's going to happen, but staff internally has been discussing dog policies at all of our other facilities. And because of the opening of the dog park, we will be coming back to the commission to talk about all of the dog policies and the dog-friendly policies throughout the park systems and trails. At this time, before I entertain questions and comments, I'd like to go over the dog park rules and regs, especially for the people that are watching on TV, because they might want to know what the expectations are for using the dog park at Fuji Park. And you have a copy of it that I just handed out. The first rule, first off, before I read the rules, I'd like to let you know that when we looked at establishing rules for the dog, fencing is already installed, and the size is just under 2 total acres. And we've just recently planted 12 large trees in both sections of the park. And we have a drip irrigation system installed. And at each tree, we have a protective square split rail wood fence to protect each tree in the park individually. We have 4 park benches that have been installed. We have 2 of those in each section of the dog park. And a watering station is in each section of the dog park with a frost-free hydrant, and it has a rock base for drainage. We have two disposable Mutt-Mitt stations in each area, and that's for people to clean up after the dogs. And we have signage, obviously, telling people that they do need to clean up after their animal. Designated parking spaces are on the east and the north sides of the park. Things we still have to do to open the park, which we anticipate opening next week, sometime would be to install more signs. We need to install a bear-proof trash receptacle. We need to place concrete culvert play features in both sections. What we did was we obtained some concrete culverts from the Public Works Department that they don't need anymore. So we're going to piece those together, and we're going to put them in both the large and the small dog areas, give them something to play with. In the future, as more funding becomes available, what we'd like to see is some shade structures, at least a shade shelter in each section of the park, one in the large dog area and one in the small dog area. We'd like to have more park benches in there. We talked about picnic tables in the dog park at one time, but we met with the Parks for Paws people, and they preferred not to have the picnic tables in the park because we don't allow food or drink in the park, which I'll get to when I talk about the rules and regs. And so we thought that might send a little message, wrong message to people thinking that they could come picnic in the dog park. One of the things that the Parks for Paws people thought that they would like to see is a more granular surface in the park. And right now we have a decomposed granite, which is basically what the natural surface is right now. And maybe down the road they would like to import a more granular surface that they would, be a better surface for the dogs and provide better drainage in the park too. One of the things we talked about in the future would be to add some drinking fountains, but we can't do that right now because we need a sewer line at the facility to be legal by health codes to install a drinking fountain. So if in the future we get the funding, we'd like to install that, and then also the sewer line that goes from the restroom at Fuji Park to the dog park. The dog park, like I said, is anticipated to be made available and open to the public sometime next week. We will post that particular date once we know the specific date in the park. Our plan is that once we open the off-leash dog park, then we would post in the grass area of Fuji Park that that dogs can still remain in the grass area of Fuji Park, but they must be on a leash at all times. The only exception to that would be is if we have a dog show or a dog competition where the dogs need to be off-leash. This project, as the commission well knows, could not have happened without the efforts of the Parks for Paws group, and especially Ilona Struhl, who's the leader of the group. They've already pumped in more than $20,000 towards the dog park to date, and they're still out raising funds to get more amenities for the dog park. So hats off to them. They are looking at a more formal grand opening. We're going to do a soft opening, this fall, but they're looking at a more formal grand opening sometime in the spring of 2012. And sometime down the road, we don't know when that's going to happen, but staff internally has been discussing dog policies at all of our other facilities. And because of the opening of the dog park, we will be coming back to the commission to talk about all of the dog policies and the dog-friendly policies throughout the park systems and trails. At this time, before I entertain questions and comments, I'd like to go over the dog park rules and regs, especially for the people that are watching on TV, because they might want to know what the expectations are for using the dog park at Fuji Park. And you have a copy of it that I just handed out. The first rule, first off, before I read the rules, I'd like to let you know that when we looked at establishing rules for the dog park, first thing we did was we collected dog park rules from throughout the country. So pretty much every rule that you see on this list, and it's a pretty extensive list of dog rules, is something that we had obtained from another dog park or another agency or another county or another city that has a dog park. And so then we took these rules, we drafted them several drafts. As you see, this one's titled The Third Draft. But we routed these rules to the Parks for Paws folks to see, what rules made sense to them, what was user-friendly for them. And as the city, We looked at what we need to do to protect the human users, what we need to do to protect the canine users, what we need to do to protect and maintain the facility to make sure that they don't tear it up and that we can maintain it with, you know, the minimal resources that we have left. And also, you know, first and foremost, to protect the city from a liability standpoint, because there is a potential for some liability to the city if we don't have some firm rules in place and some enforcement. We're hoping that the folks who use the dog park will police themselves and comply with the rules. We will be, you know, as staff and the park rangers have time available, we will be enforcing the rules as well at the dog park. The first rule on the list is that the park hours will be from dawn to dusk daily. Enter at your own risk. Dogs may be off-leash but under the control of their owners. Owners are legally responsible for their dogs and any injuries caused by their dogs. Dog owners must clean up after their dogs using the provided disposable bags and trash receptacles or by their own provided means. Violators will be subject to a misdemeanor citation for littering per Carson City Municipal Codes and be subject to losing the privilege to use the facility. No aggressive dogs allowed. No human or dog food allowed. Dogs must be accompanied by their handlers at all times, and handlers must be at least 13 years of age. Only dogs with a proof of license and immunizations are allowed. Dogs recently exposed to or recovering from a contagious disease are not allowed in the park. Female dogs in heat or puppies under 4 months old are prohibited. Please do not allow your dog to dig holes or be destructive in any way. That's, of course, protecting the facility. The next rule is a limit of 3 dogs per handler. The next one is children 5 to 12 years of age must be accompanied by an adult 18 years or older at all times. Children under 5 years of age are not allowed. Be respectful of other users and their dogs. And then, of course, we put in here to report incidents. They can call the Sheriff's Department non-emergency dispatch for emergencies, call 911. And that we put down there that the park is managed by the Carson City Parks and Rec Department, and to report any problems to us if they see them. And, of course, we want people to have fun and enjoy the park and obey all of those rules that we established. But with that, I can hopefully answer any questions or comments you may have. I will point out that Donna Curtis, Commissioner Curtis, was instrumental with this group in helping us get this dog park off the ground, and hats off to her and the Parks for Paws people and staff, Roger and Vern and Tom Grundy and Darren Anderson with the Public Works Department. We all work together as a team, you know, the private citizens as well as the city agency and the departments, and we made it happen so far. And we look forward to opening the facility next week. So with that, I will entertain any questions or comments.
And before you have your questions, I'd like to interject. Vern reminded me that we should also mention the Public Works Department. Public Works Department was a very big partner in this program. In fact, contributed about $37,000 in the construction of this park, primarily through grading the site. So without their involvement, this park wouldn't have been a reality also.
Good point.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Scott, for your presentation, and congratulations. I went by there yesterday and saw the trees and everything. It looks very, just pretty much all it needs is of some people and their dogs. And congratulations to everyone, Parks for Paws, and for our own Commissioner Curtis for her stalwart and dedicated efforts in getting this project.
Park. First thing we did was we collected dog park rules from throughout the country. So pretty much every rule that you see on this list, and it's a pretty extensive list of dog rules, is something that we had obtained from another dog park or another agency or another county or another city that has a dog park. And so then we took these rules, we drafted them several drafts. As you see, this one's titled The Third Draft. But we routed these rules to the Parks for Paws folks to see, you know, what rules made sense to them, you know, what was user-friendly for them. And as the city, we looked at what we need to do to protect the human users, what we need to do to protect the canine users, what we need to do to protect and maintain the facility to make sure that they don't tear it up and that we can maintain it with, you know, the minimal resources that we have left. And also, you know, first and foremost, to protect the city from a liability standpoint, because there is a potential for some liability to the city if we don't have some firm rules in place and some enforcement. We're hoping that the folks who use the dog park will police themselves and comply with the rules. We will be, you know, as staff and the park rangers have time available, we will be enforcing the rules as well at the dog park. The first rule on the list is that the park hours will be from dawn to dusk daily. Enter at your own risk. Dogs may be off-leash but under the control of their owners. Owners are legally responsible for their dogs and any injuries caused by their dogs. Dog owners must clean up after their dogs using the provided disposable bags and trash receptacles or by their own provided means. Violators will be subject to a misdemeanor citation for littering per Carson City Municipal Codes and be subject to losing the privilege to use the facility. No aggressive dogs allowed. No human or dog food allowed. Dogs must be accompanied by their handlers at all times, and handlers must be at least 13 years of age. Only dogs with a proof of license and immunizations are allowed. Dogs recently exposed to or recovering from a contagious disease are not allowed in the park. Female dogs in heat or puppies under 4 months old are prohibited. Please do not allow your dog to dig holes or be destructive in any way. That's, of course, protecting the facility. The next rule is a limit of 3 dogs per handler. The next one is children 5 to 12 years of age must be accompanied by an adult 18 years or older at all times. Children under 5 years of age are not allowed. Be respectful of other users and their dogs. And then, of course, we put in here to report incidents. They can call the Sheriff's Department non-emergency dispatch for emergencies. Call 911. And that we put down there that the park is managed by the Carson City Parks and Rec Department, and to report any problems to us if they see them. And, of course, we want people to have fun and enjoy the park and obey all of those rules that we established. But with that, I can hopefully answer any questions or comments you may have. I will point out that Donna Curtis, Commissioner Curtis, was instrumental with this group in helping us get this dog park off the ground, and hats off to her and the Parks for Paws people and staff. Roger and Vern and Tom Grundy and Darren Anderson with the Public Works Department. We all work together as a team, you know, the private citizens as well as the city agency and the departments, and we made it happen so far. And we look forward to opening the facility next week. So with that, I will entertain any questions or comments.
And before you have your questions, I'd like to interject. Vern reminded me that we should also mention the Public Works Department. Public Works Department was a very big partner in this program. In fact, contributed about $37,000 in the construction of this park, primarily through grading the site. So without their involvement, this park wouldn't have been a reality also.
Good point.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Scott, for your presentation, and congratulations. I went by there yesterday and saw the trees and everything. It looks very, just pretty much all it needs is of some people and their dogs. And congratulations to everyone, Parks for Paws, and for our own Commissioner Curtis for her stalwart and dedicated efforts in getting this project begun and seen through, and as we've heard, it'll be opening in a week. So it's been a great meeting. All these congratulations and great things and new things opening and things moving along. It's very, very nice to be involved. So any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Curtis.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I wanted to say I'm relieved that I've lived long enough to see the recreation center started. But I'm very pleased to see that this is actually a reality. I mean, it's, you know, something that I thought of when I first came to this city, because there weren't any dog parks, and I did get a dog park started where I lived before, and, you know, but the cooperation here and from staff in particular and from everybody has just been really great. So I think we've done a lot more than I even envisioned, actually, you know, without having big sources of money available. I think we've really done well. Just a couple of thoughts. One is to, you know, to clarify for people that if they have a small dog that they want to go in the big dog area, they can. There's a lot of small dogs that really like to play with big dogs. If you've been to Fuji Park, you know, you'll see them. And so obviously the opposite isn't true. You don't want the big dogs in the small. But the other thing, it says one of the rules that we talked about, dogs may be off leash. The problem is, I think there could be some problems if people actually bring their dogs into the dog park and keep them on the leash. You know, hopefully there won't be, but certainly would like to encourage people to take their dogs off the leash, because dogs are different dogs sometimes when they're on a leash. I was also going to say that, you know, Parks for Paws, on behalf of Alona, definitely looks forward to having some kind of a grand opening, and probably will be announcing that there's naming opportunities in the park. For example, if you want to have your name or your organization's name on a bench, you know, for a fee, that could be done, and that just helps pay for those kind of structures. So, but thank you very much, and especially you, Scott, and Anver.
Thank you.
Supervisor Walt.
The signage. Are all of the rules that are on here on the sheet that you have given us, is that all going to be on signs out there?
Every single one. Yeah, it's a big sign.
Okay.
It's a big sign.
We thought about having one sign for each rule and just having spread around in the dog park.
And just to comment on Donna's comment regarding the dogs being on a leash, I think what we agreed was we were going to try it and see if that was going to be a problem. We did look at the rules, you know, nationwide, and we couldn't see where other dog parks have had that kind of a problem. But Roger and I both recognize what Donna's saying, that a dog can get defensive if it's on a leash and other loose dogs or off-leash dogs are running up to it. A lot of the problems that we've had in Fuji Park have been where people have shown up with their dog on a leash and the dog's off leash have ran up, and then the dog on the leash is defensive, and that causes problems. So we're going to keep a close eye on that.
I just had a couple other questions, comments, just so that I have a clear understanding regarding the water line. In order to establish a drinking water, a potable water line out to the dog park, a similar or parallel sewer line is required. Is that my understanding?
That's correct. We have potable water to the dog park because we have the two frost-free hydrants. So we have a hydrant in each section of the dog park for watering the dogs. What we need for a drinking fountain per code, per health code, is, you know, in the good old days, we used to be able to go out and dig a trench and fill it full of rock and have a leach field, a French drain, so to speak, to drain off the water. They don't allow that anymore per city code, and that's pretty much a nationwide thing now as far as health codes go. So what we need to do is run a sewer line from the existing restrooms that are at the west end of the developed portion of Fuji Park, and that sewer line would go to the dog park, and that's why the drinking fountain is so expensive. The drinking fountain itself is the cheap part. It's just running the sewer line, and it's got to go back uphill to the restroom, so we have to install a pump system to pump it back over there. So it's going to be a little pricey.
Sounds like done and seen through, and as we've heard, it'll be opening in a week. So it's been a great meeting. All these congratulations and great things and new things opening and things moving along. It's very, very nice to be involved. So any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Curtis.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I wanted to say I'm relieved that I've lived long enough to see the recreation center started. But I'm very pleased to see that this is actually a reality. I mean, it's, you know, something that I thought of when I first came to this city, because there weren't any dog parks, and I did get a dog park started where I lived before, and, you know, but the cooperation here and from staff in particular and from everybody has just been really great. So I think we've done a lot more than I even envisioned, actually, you know, without having big sources of money available. I think we've really done well. Just a couple of thoughts. One is to, you know, to clarify for people that if they have a small dog that they want to go in the big dog area, they can. There's a lot of small dogs that really like to play with big dogs. If you've been to Fuji Park, you know, you'll see them. And so obviously the opposite isn't true. You don't want the big dogs in the small. But the other thing, it says one of the rules that we talked about, dogs may be off leash. The problem is, I think there could be some problems if people actually bring their dogs into the dog park and keep them on the leash. You know, hopefully there won't be, but certainly would like to encourage people to take their dogs off the leash, because dogs are different dogs sometimes when they're on a leash. I was also going to say that, you know, Parks for Paws, on behalf of Alona, definitely looks forward to having some kind of a grand opening, and probably will be announcing that there's naming opportunities in the park. For example, if you want to have your name or your organization's name on a bench, you know, for a fee, that could be done, and that just helps pay for those kind of structures. So, but thank you very much, and especially you, Scott, and Anver.
Thank you.
Supervisor Walt.
The signage. Are all of the rules that are on here on the sheet that you have given us, is that all going to be on signs out there?
Every single one. Yeah, it's a big sign.
Okay.
It's a big sign.
We thought about having one sign for each rule and just having spread around in the dog park.
And just to comment on Donna's comment regarding the dogs being on a leash, I think what we agreed was we were going to try it and see if that was going to be a problem. We did look at the rules, you know, nationwide, and we couldn't see where other dog parks have had that kind of a problem. But Roger and I both recognize what Donna's saying, that a dog can get defensive if it's on a leash and other loose dogs or off-leash dogs are running up to it. A lot of the problems that we've had in Fuji Park have been where people have shown up with their dog on a leash and the dog's off leash have ran up, and then the dog on the leash is defensive, and that causes problems. So we're going to keep a close eye on that.
I just had a couple other questions, comments, just so that I have a clear understanding regarding the water line. In order to establish a drinking water, a potable water line out to the dog park, a similar or parallel sewer line is required. Is that my understanding?
That's correct. We have potable water to the dog park because we have the two frost-free hydrants. So we have a hydrant in each section of the dog park for watering the dogs. What we need for a drinking fountain per code, per health code, is, you know, in the good old days, we used to be able to go out and dig a trench and fill it full of rock and have a leach field, a French drain, so to speak, to drain off the water. They don't allow that anymore per city code, and that's pretty much a nationwide thing now as far as health codes go. So what we need to do is run a sewer line from the existing restrooms that are at the west end of the developed portion of Fuji Park, and that sewer line would go to the dog park, and that's why the drinking fountain is so expensive. The drinking fountain itself is the cheap part. It's just running the sewer line, and it's got to go back uphill to the restroom, so we have to install a pump system to pump it back over there. So it's going to be a little pricey.
Sounds like a lucrative naming opportunity for a deep pocket donor. Congratulations on the dog park, and the best of luck in the future with the sewer and water line, certainly. My other item was just regarding the food. I know a lot of people, you know, use snacks or treats for their dogs to get them to respond or to get them to, you know, to do certain things. And so with no food being allowed in the dog park, I just kind of wanted to, I guess, maybe amplify that point, or, you know, if you or maybe Commissioner Curtis, being a dog owner, have some comment or thoughts on that. But that is a clear understanding that those such treats are not allowed. Is that correct?
That's correct. No type of food, human or dog food or treats or snacks, are going to be allowed in there. It's just an attractive for the dogs, and it's going to cause problems. A lot of the problems that we have in Fuji Park right now are caused by – that's why we have the rules in there that from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. the dogs must be on a leash, because – and we even had to fence off the picnic area around the playground because, you know, people go there and grab lunch from Costco, go to the park and try and have lunch, and then the dogs all come around and become a nuisance. So we had a lot of discussion about this with the Parks for Paws people, and we came to the conclusion that it's best just not to have any kind of food or drink in a park.
Thank you. Okay. Commissioner Curtis?
Yeah, the difficulty with that, you know, and not having, say, a picnic bench or something like that, is it is nice to be able to sit around and talk with people and your dogs. And when you're in benches, you're all kind of facing the same way. It's not the same as sitting around a table. But as you said, then you put a table in, then people – first thing they're going to do is bring their food in. It is difficult. I think another thing that's kind of difficult is when somebody has, say, some kind of special equipment, like a ball, you know, thing they're throwing the ball for their dog. And that happens in Fuji a lot, and other dogs come over and want to play with the ball too. And so it's, you know, just going to be a learning process for people. They're just going to have to work it out. You know, some days, if they're there at 6 in the morning, they probably can have a corner in that dog park and, you know, throw the ball for their dog and whatever, and nobody's going to bother them. Other times, it's probably not going to be possible. So, I just wanted to make another comment. When you're having your meeting and talking about, you know, what you want to consider on the other dog park, so just repeat again what I've said before. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there are really two different things. When you have a dog park, this is for people to come in and, you know, they have the security that their dog's inside a fence and they're not going to run out in the street. And then they can kind of socialize and, you know, they need to keep their eye on the dog, but, you know, they're not strictly, you know, have to be with the dog and follow the dog around as much. But there's other parks where you're able to get out and walk with your dog. And, you know, I'm hoping that that won't be diminished too much because it's a totally different experience. So.
At this time, the only change to our existing dog policies will be the on-leash requirement within Fuji Park. As far as our other dog-friendly parks, we haven't changed anything. So, at this time.
Regarding the hours, dawn to dusk, so will our park ranger then be, he'll be opening and closing the food fishing pond and the dog park? Is that accurate? Or,
you know, I've been thinking about that, and Roger and I haven't discussed it in much detail, but my thought would be that we don't ever lock the dog park. The dog park remains unlocked because the park itself doesn't close until 11 p.m. This basically just tells people that it's unsafe to be out there because you're going to trip over something because you can't see. There's no lighting out there. So it covers us from a liability standpoint, but my intent is not to patrol out there and kick. If we see people in there after dusk, probably not going to kick them out. We will advise them that the dog park closes at dusk, but, you know, this is just something that to let people know that it's not a lit facility, and, you know, that we've pretty much covered ourselves by saying it, you enter at your own risk. And we have that rule. We have the dawn to dusk rule. We have the enter at your own risk rule. But we don't have the manpower or the staff to go out there and lock it and unlock it. You know, people are going to get there early in the morning. A lot of people will get there, you know, before our staff even starts work because they do now at Fuji Park. So we're just going to leave it unlocked.
Okay. That, the creative naming opportunity for a deep pocket donor. Congratulations on the dog park and the best of luck in the future with the sewer and water lines, certainly. My other item was just regarding the food. I know a lot of people, you know, use snacks or treats for their dogs to get them to respond or to get them to, you know, to do certain things. And so with no food being allowed in the dog park, I just kind of wanted to, I guess, maybe amplify that point, or, you know, if you or maybe Commissioner Curtis, being a dog owner, have some comment or thoughts on that. But that is a clear understanding that those such treats are not allowed. Is that correct?
That's correct. No type of food, human or dog food or treats or snacks, are going to be allowed in there. It's just an attractant for the dogs, and it's going to cause problems. A lot of the problems that we have in Fuji Park right now are caused by – that's why we have the rules in there that from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. the dogs must be on a leash, because – and we even had to fence off the picnic area around the playground because, you know, people go there and grab lunch from Costco, go to the park and try and have lunch, and then the dogs all come around and become a nuisance. So we had a lot of discussion about this with the Parks for Paws people, and we came to the conclusion that it's best just not to have any kind of food or drink in a park.
Okay. Commissioner Curtis?
Yeah, the difficulty with that, you know, and not having, say, a picnic bench or something like that, is it is nice to be able to sit around and talk with people and your dogs. And when you're in benches, you're all kind of facing the same way. It's not the same as sitting around a table. But as you said, then you put a table in, then people, first thing they're going to do is bring their food in. It is difficult. I think another thing that's kind of difficult is when somebody has, say, some kind of special equipment, like a ball, you know, thing they're throwing the ball for their dog. And that happens in Fuji a lot, and other dogs come over and want to play with the ball too. And so it's, yeah, just going to be a learning process for people. They're just going to have to work it out. And you know, some days, if they're there at 6 in the morning, they probably can have a corner in that dog park and, you know, throw the ball for their dog and whatever, and nobody's going to bother them. Other times, it's probably not going to be possible. So, and I just wanted to make another comment. When you're having your meeting and talking about, you know, what you want to consider on the other dog park, so just repeat again what I've said before. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there are really two different things. When you have a dog park, this is for people to come in and, you know, they have the security that their dog's inside a fence and they're not going to run out in the street. And then they can kind of socialize and, you know, they need to keep their eye on the dog, but, you know, they're not strictly, you know, have to be with the dog and follow the dog around as much. But there's other parks where you're able to get out and walk with your dog. And, you know, I'm hoping that that won't be diminished too much because it's a totally different experience. So,
at this time, the only change to our existing dog policies will be the on-leash requirement within Fuji Park. As far as our other dog-friendly parks, we haven't changed anything. So, at this time.
Regarding the hours, dawn to dusk, so will our park ranger then be, he'll be opening and closing the fishing pond and the dog park? Is that accurate? Or,
you know, I've been thinking about that, and Roger and I haven't discussed it in much detail, but my thought would be that we don't ever lock the dog park. The dog park remains unlocked because the park itself doesn't close until 11 p.m. This basically just tells people that it's unsafe to be out there because you're going to trip over something because you can't see. There's no lighting out there. So it covers us from a liability standpoint, but my intent is not to patrol out there and kick. If we see people in there after dusk, probably not going to kick them out. We will advise them that the dog park closes at dusk, but, you know, this is just something that to let people know that it's not a lit facility, and, you know, that we've pretty much covered ourselves by saying it, you enter at your own risk. And we have that rule. We have the dawn to dusk rule. We have the enter at your own risk rule. But we don't have the manpower or the staff to go out there and lock it and unlock it. You know, people are going to get there early in the morning. A lot of people will get there, you know, before our staff even starts work because they do now at Fuji Park. So we're just going to leave it unlocked.
Okay. The first item is the rules, and, you know, rule number two is enter at your own risk. So that does indeed cover it. So thanks for the clarification. Any other commissioner comments regarding the dog park? Again, congratulations. Look forward to the celebration, the opening, and to many years of happy people and their dogs, or happy dogs and their people. Any citizen comments regarding the dog park? Hearing none, thank you. We move to item 5, members' announcements and requests for information. Any such items? Supervisor Wald.
Just wanted to thank Parks and Rec again. Big soccer tournament this weekend, the Kit Carson soccer tournament, November 5th and 6th. And again, we couldn't do it without Parks and Rec.
Any other comments? Item 6, any future agenda items? Hearing, seeing none. Are there any citizen comments? Members of the public who wish to address the Parks and Recreation Commission may come forward and speak on any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item and allowable under the open meeting law. Comments may be limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion or action, please request the chairperson to schedule the matter for a future meeting. Hearing and seeing no such comments, we now have an action for adjournment. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.